It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. We're doing it cottage style. All of my guests are in Skypeosaurus behind me, and we've got lots to talk about, including why it's dangerous to use CarPlay and Android Auto. More dangerous than drinking. Steven Sinofsky, former Windows 8 designer, says the iPad is a breakthrough, the new iPad. We'll talk about that. And how to avoid Zoom bombing. It's all coming up next on Twit. This Week in Tech comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 763, recorded Sunday, March 22nd, 2020. Ghost Finger. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost, because everything is online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan. And get the plan shipped to your door free at mintmobile.com/twit. And by LinkedIn Marketing Solutions. LinkedIn can help you speak to the right professionals at the right time. They are offering a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit right now to launch your first campaign. So visit linkedin.com/twit. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click. It's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twit. And by Capterra, the website millions of people use monthly to find software for their team or business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with some of the most interesting journalists in the business. We've got 3 Twit friends on today, and I'm very happy. First time ever on the show, I think, Lou Maresca. Is this your first time,
right,
Lou?
That's right. Yeah, it's first time. First time for everything, right?
Lou is the longtime host of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Long time, not really. But you took over for Father Robert when he left. So it's been a year, right, at least?
Yeah. And, you know, a long-time co-host for
always on it.
7 years before that. Yeah.
Before that, also on Coding 101, we love Lou. He is a principal engineering manager at Microsoft in the Office Products Division. And they let you do this, huh?
They do. They love it. They think it's great. You know, and I try to stay very open and for all technology and not favorite Microsoft, obviously. And it works out great. I think they enjoy me being on.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. It's a great score for us. Also with us, Mr. Mike Elgin. Of course, we love Mike. Our peripatetic gastronomad is home.
Yes, in Silicon Valley, South Silicon Valley, where I'm sheltering in place. And I figured if I had to shelter in a place, I wanted to be in a place where I have health insurance
yes,
and access to hospitals and all that kind of stuff. So, no, it's great to be here. And I didn't want to get stuck in Mexico where I was before. So I'm glad to be back.
As wonderful as Mexico City is, and I'm sure that people are really warm and helping each other and all that,
yes,
it's still, you know, a little challenging, I'm sure, to be there. And it's always better to be back with your family. My son Henry, who's 25, left to travel Asia. Boy, he couldn't have picked a worse time in December. And he's been to Thailand, Vietnam. He's been to all the hot spots. And he's currently in Bali. And he's going, should I come home? And I don't know. I'm thinking, maybe, maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe you won't be able to get home. I don't know. There's no direct flights. He'd have to fly through Singapore, which is closed down. Also with us, Sam Abdul-Samad. He is our car guy. He's been on. Whoops, let me get your lower third. I'm doing the switching today, so it's going to be interesting. Sam is a principal researcher at Navigant Research. He's also the host of the Wheel Bearings podcast at wheelbearings.media. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Leo. Good to be back again. The original plan was I was supposed to be in studio with you today, but you know, coming in ahead of NVIDIA GTC this week, but obviously that was canceled, and so was everything else. So here I am.
You live in Detroit. Is Detroit shut down? I don't know what the rules are. Every state seems to have different rules. What's Michigan doing?
We're not on a full shelter in place yet, like Silicon Valley is, or I guess all of California now. But about a week or so ago, the governor ordered all the restaurants and bars and non-essential businesses to shut down. And, you know, so the only thing they're allowed to do is do curbside service, you know, or takeout service for food. So a lot of restaurants have just closed completely. Others, friends of ours that has a restaurant in downtown Ann Arbor, they're doing curbside takeout service. So everybody's just trying to get through this. All the car plants and parts plants are all shut down. All the engineers and everybody else are working from home, so it's tough.
Man, and you're in Lou. You're in Seattle, which is, of course, right. the epicenter, at least was. Now you're no longer the epicenter, but for a long time was the epicenter of this. How are things there?
You know, it's interesting. The governor has yet to shut everything down. We're still kind of still essential, non-essential people, obviously still working. Businesses are still going on. You know, everything's kind of still open. Restaurants are still open, so they're still encouraging people to go out.
What?
You know, I'm guessing that sooner
That's
or later,
crazy.
It will end up just like the rest of the states.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not going anywhere. So.
Yeah. And of course, Lou has like 15 children, so you probably.
That's right.
How many
four
kids?
Four children, yeah.
Yeah. Four? Fifth on the way?
You never know. You never know. We're all kind of cooped up in here. You never know what
about 9 months from now, probably.
You know, there's right. Isn't there going to be a baby boom? I think in 9 months, I have a feeling.
I think so. I think they definitely so.
Anyway, we're thrilled to have all three of you. For people listening, the show shouldn't sound any different, but for people watching, the show is going to look a lot different. We've gone back to the old school way of doing things. I am because we don't want to bring in a bunch of staff. We've really gone down to a skeleton staff in the studios. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, we closed the studios to outside visitors, which I'm glad I did. I just wanted to protect our staff. And then last week, we decided to it was really kind of at the same time as California itself, or I guess the seven Bay Area counties. We're in the eight Bay Area counties decided to do a shelter in place order. We sent everybody home. There is some staff has to come in. John Jammer B, our studio engineer, is here because he has to, you know, put tapes in the machine or whatever it is he does that I don't know how to do. And then we most of the editors are working at home. But I'm in my office at the studio because I've locked the door. Nobody can come in here. And so this is, I think, a fairly safe place for me to be. And I'm switching the show as we used to way back in the cottage days 9 years ago. Where I'm at my desk and we've got a monitor with the three guests in it. And I may be a little distracted because as Sam just told us on the radio show, this was a shocker that you are as bad a driver when you're using CarPlay or Android Auto. You're actually worse than if you were drunk.
Much, much worse. Yeah. A study that came out earlier this week from the UK, they took about 40 drivers, 20 Android users, 20 iPhone users, put them in a simulator and had them run through a series of tasks while doing about a 15-minute drive and measured their reaction times and the amount of time that their eyes were gazing down at the screen. And they found that compared to when they did a study previously with drivers, you know, that had drank some alcohol and others that had smoked some marijuana, the results were significantly worse. The reaction times were 53% slower when using the Android Auto touch interface, 57% slower when using CarPlay touch interface.
Slower than if you were drunk?
Well, slower than the baseline.
Unimpaired.
For the drivers that were drunk, it was only 12% slower. And those smoking marijuana were only 21% slower. So it was, you know, more than 2.5 times worse than somebody smoking marijuana.
Is it the people are reaching down and looking at the screen and reaching down to touch it? They're taking their eyes off the road. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a combination of, you know, looking away from the road, looking down at the screen. And this is one of the things that car makers have started to do in the last couple of years is, you know, new vehicle designs are actually putting the screen up higher up on top of the dash. So it looks more like a freestanding tablet on top of the dash. Okay. So it's closer to, it's not as far away from your line of, you know, from your normal line of sight when you're driving. But the other problem is, you know, when you do have to reach out for a touchscreen, reaching your arm out to hit a touch target, you know, as you're driving down the road, your arm is cantilevered out there, so your finger is naturally going to tend to move around a little bit.
Yeah.
So you have to put more cognitive effort in to actually stabilize your finger and hit that touch target than, for example, if you're using a little central controller like a BMW iDrive type of controller or something like that on the console or just twisting a knob.
Wow.
That's they would have done the usability testing for that. I mean, why did they not know that till now?
Well, I think we did kind of, right? I mean, I remember when we talked, we would go to talk to Ford back in the day when Ford Sync was an advertiser, and their whole pitch was keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, talk to the system. They kind of knew that it was dangerous to touch it. But Sam, you didn't tell them the worst part. If you're talking on the phone with a hands free,
even talking with a hands free phone, you know, it was still worse. The reaction times were still longer than if you're drinking or smoking marijuana.
Just talking on the phone, looking at the road,
yeah,
hands on the wheel, just talking. Because you're really in two spaces.
You can't concentrate. You can't concentrate as much on what you should be doing, which is driving.
We should not be allowed to drive. I swear to God.
It's always been known that even talking to somebody riding in the car with you, takes some of your attention away from the road. So, you know, touchscreens are the worst possible interface to have in a car. And it's unfortunate that over the last decade, we've had this transition. You know, everybody's got their smartphones and everybody wants that same kind of interface in the car, but it's the worst possible interface to have in the car.
Yeah.
Did they do any testing about your reaction times if you are drinking alcohol, smoking marijuana, talking on the phone, and texting?
They didn't have to worry about that.
Shockingly enough, when you combine all of those things together, it actually gets better. I don't know how that works, but, you know, counterintuitive.
How it works.
It's why we got to push for self-driving cars. I mean, we're just terrible drivers. And yet, there are fewer highway deaths by a long shot than there have been in the past.
Oh, yeah. I mean, over the progress we've made over the last 50 years, you know, since the mid-1960s, we've gone from about a fatality rate of about 6.5, between 6.5 and 7 fatalities for every 100 million miles we drive to just over 1. So, I mean, we've reduced it by more than 75%, almost 80% reduction in the fatality rate in the last 50 years. And, you know, so we have made tremendous progress. And, you know, actually, you know, for all the, you know, yes, 38,000 people a year die on the roads in the United States. But, you know, when you consider
it used to be more, used to be 50,000.
Yeah, it was a lot more than that. Yeah. And, you know, that was when we were driving a lot less. In the late 60s, we were driving about 900 billion miles a year, 800 or 900 billion miles a year. Now we're driving 3.2 trillion miles a year. And having fewer fatalities. So we've made tremendous progress, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah.
I think it's worse if they move the cheese too, right? If they start moving the UI around and people don't know where to look, and so now it gets worse.
Do you have cheese in your car? No, I know what you're talking about.
Cheese, move the target, right? And they tend to move the UX around. You know, and people do that. Like organizations do that, and then you can't find stuff. And so you spend more time on the touchscreen.
That's actually one of the advantages of Android Auto or CarPlay versus an OEM, you know, the factory systems, because those tend, you know, they're obviously different from every manufacturer. And at least if you're using Android Auto or CarPlay, it's consistent. So if you have more than one car in your household that you drive on a regular basis and you're using one of these smartphone projection systems, at least it's going to be the same whichever car you get into. And that, you know, testing that they've done versus manufacturer design systems, the Android Auto and CarPlay are better than those, but it's still a lot worse than nothing at all.
Wow.
One of the reasons that fatalities used to be so much higher is that distracted drivers have always existed. I mean, you were joking around about cheese in the car, but Leo, but in fact, people eat in the car while they're driving. I've seen people read the newspaper, put it on their makeup, using the rearview mirror and stuff like that. I mean, people are, like you say, we need self-driving cars ASAP because human beings cannot be trusted
for the
with a
link.
Death machine like that.
Well, it's funny. Porsche used to have this policy that they would not put cup holders in their cars. For a long time, they were one of the last manufacturers to put cup holders in their cars because they thought, why would anybody driving a Porsche want a cup holder in the car?
Yeah, but
you should be driving.
Then they put the cup between their legs, and that's not good either. So I think a cup holder's the best. And it's the same thing with CarPlay. If you don't put CarPlay in, they're going to pick up the phone and do it. My daughter, I didn't, after her fourth accident, I said, you can't drive anymore, but she lately has needed to. So I said, okay, but the deal is you have to put your smartphone in the trunk before you get in the car. You cannot bring it into the cabin with you at all. But I still worry about her fiddling with
the radio. Well, what we need to do is go back to 100% manual transmissions, with a clutch pedal.
This is the guy who drives a 20-year-old Miata. Says we should
30. If you can't handle a clutch pedal, and shifting for yourself, then probably shouldn't be driving.
It's a good point. You were driving a lot more when you had to, be in a gear and shift and do all that stuff. There's a lot. I used to have my Mustang was a manual, and it's a lot of work. I got tired of it. It's too much work to drive.
Prior to automatic transmission, we never had sudden unintended acceleration incidents in cars. We never had people misapplying the pedals when you had
you just stripped the gears.
That's right.
All right. This was a week we did actually get some tech news. I am deathly afraid that as this lockdown continues over the next few weeks and possibly months, maybe who knows, a year, there's going to be less and less tech news. I don't know, Lou, you work at Microsoft. How much – Google's already said we're not going to update Chrome or Chrome OS. Everybody's at home. I don't know why they can't do that. But are you still – you're working at home, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The interesting – that's I saw that comment on Windows Weekly. I was watching. You guys were talking about that. And the interesting thing here is that companies are updating. Like Microsoft is going to continue to update things. It's really not us that's going to be the cause of it. We're working. We're doing everyday work. But – worried about other businesses, right? The businesses that are working from home or not working at all. And if we go and update things on them and things break, there's nobody there to fix them. So I think that's one of the major problems, I think.
So
I just wrote...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Leo. I just wrote a three-part series on what enterprises need to be thinking about with the coronavirus. And it's pretty rich material. But one of the things that I... one of the conclusions I came to is that it would be a huge mistake for large organizations of any kind, including enterprises, to back off on IT spending generally. I mean, they should be expecting to increase IT spending simply because a lot of what we're doing now is we're going from the physical to the virtual. So we're spending a lot less on meetings and travel and all that stuff and a little more on video conferencing. We need to spend a lot more on security because this is the opportunity of a lifetime for cyber criminals because suddenly all of these people are working from home over insecure networks with insecure equipment. And now's the time to get out those phishing attacks when everybody's nervous. The email's coming saying, well, here's a cure for the coronavirus or here's your tax rebate for the coronavirus. And then people are working from home on their own personal equipment, which has not been secured by the company. So I think in general, companies need to be thinking about cost containment in terms of spending more on IT and security and a lot less on everything else.
And let me be clear, too. We obviously are still putting out security patches. That's one of the most important things. And in fact, on TWIA, we actually covered a bunch of other things. Just like Mike was saying, to make sure that you are doing the right thing and you're securing the right thing, make sure you have MFA is turned on and people are using the right services, especially for remote workers, because that can leave a bunch of gaps. Like we said, your user's the weakest link. So you need to make sure that they're all secured.
It's funny. Some businesses like ours are well prepared for this, right? You guys are always remote. And we've joked a lot about how most geeks are introverts. And for us, this is just business as usual. But what we do is
I've been working at home since 2014.
Yeah, right. What's the difference?
About half of my company, is about almost 6,000 employees, I think, are remote workers
anyway.
So,
right.
You know, it's not unusual. You know, my company's been fairly well prepared for this.
But now we got a lot of people who've never done this before, and there's a lot of pain. I'm even watching the 24-hour news channels. You know, Anderson Cooper self-isolated this week, and he's broadcasting from his house. He obviously, CNN sent engineers over and set up a nice camera shot, nice that was well lit. They didn't have problems. But on the other hand, they've also been bringing in a lot of people, as we do, via Skype. And every error that we've made over the years on Skype, I'm watching them go through the whole thing with echoey video, out of sync, lip sync. I saw somebody on MSNBC wearing the dreaded iPhone earbuds, using the little microphone on that thing. And of course, just as you know, when it happens to us, we say, get rid of that. We'll send you a headset. They get a little scritching sound of the microphone against his collar. I'm hearing it and I'm actually getting kind of a little bit of PTSD going, oh, they're using I can tell he's using iPhones. It was, and then they had a podcaster on, and just like all of us, he had a microphone in front of his face like this, and I thought,
right.
He's ready, he's prepared. We've been prepared for this for a very long time. It's interesting to hear, I never thought about it, but this issue of security, we haven't heard a lot of, at least not rampant ransomware attacks. In fact, it seems like it's kind of calmed down a little bit. Mike, but do you think that this is the calm before the storm?
I do. In fact, I think that this is, several things are happening. One, it's an obvious opportunity for anybody who wants to, you know, do ransomware or any of that stuff.
Oh, I had somebody call me on the radio show saying, it's chaos. It's a great opportunity for everybody. You know, they're all making this up. I went click, hung up on him. So that's it's irresponsible. It's wrong in so many ways. But yeah, of course, the creeps are going to go, hey, big opportunity, right?
Well, I mean, think about the whole world. So some countries are ahead. Everybody's following a similar trajectory. So like China was number one, and then Italy and Europe, and now the U.S., and then Mexico and so on, and eventually Africa and all over. This is spreading worldwide, and it's going to take months and years for this to spread around. Everybody have their first wave, but it's going to leave recession and an economic downturn and layoffs in its wake everywhere it goes. And so there's going to be a lot more cyber criminals as well, because there's going to be a lot of people scrounging around looking for ways to make income. Yeah. And so it would be foolish to not expect a huge tsunami of new types of cyber attacks trying to exploit this opportunity.
Yeah, that's a terrifying thought. And then Apple, which closed all of its stores worldwide, which was wild, right? I mean, we're just going to. And at first they said for a week or two.
Except China.
Except for China, where they reopened them, which is even weirder. But I guess China's ahead of the curve, so we know how long it'll take to get the stores reopened. Announced new products this week. We're going to talk about that in just a second. I want to take a little break. Sam Abdul-Samad is here. He is principal researcher at Navigant. It's great to have you. This is so weird for me. I'm back in my office, and I can see all three of you over my shoulder. Sam is a principal researcher at Navigant Research, wheelbearings.media for his podcast. Mike Elgin at elgin.com. Are your gastronomad trips, I guess you're going to put those on hold until things clear up.
We're trying to postpone them as late as possible. So we did postpone the Morocco experience, which was going to be next month. That's going to happen in October. The next one is the Provence experience in late June and early July. Don't know about that one. So we'll probably have to postpone that, but we'll see. Hopefully we won't have to.
Chris Marquardt, who's our photo guy, does photo workshops all over the world. He was in Ethiopia, got sent home by the German embassy. They said, you're going home. Yeah. The whole thing's canceled. And he has a whole slate of upcoming trips that are on hold. I mean, it's very difficult. Everybody's going through tough times. And then Lou Maresca has to stay home with four small children. Are they used to having you work at home, Lou? Or?
You know, I used to work from home on Fridays. I used to do parental leave with my kids. I used to stay home on Fridays. So I used to have a pretty good zone here that I've set up. And so they're used to seeing me here. So they stay away most of the time. And I have this great equipment that I don't have to worry about if they're running around making noise too much.
Yeah, I don't hear a thing. Yeah. They could be screaming, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy!" I've always had a home office, and when my kids were little, they would know I was in there. They would pound on the door. So let me in.
Once in a while, you'll get my 2-year-old who'll run up and want a hug. So you might see me bend down a couple times.
I think that's great. In fact, in some ways, I mean, look, there's going to be some, you know, millions are going to die. It's a disaster, but they're economic disaster. We're going to go into a recession, or maybe depression. But there are some benefits to this. A little more family time. I think we're also going to. It's interesting. We watched a first run movie last night. We watched The Hunt last night, which was going to be released last September, then due to gun violence couldn't be, and they were going to release it now. And there's a bunch of movies that Paramount and others are putting out now. $20 rental, which is a little weird, but if you think it's still less than the movie ticket. And I wonder if that means... So there's two ways this could go when this is all over. Either people will be so anxious to get back to normalcy and being around people that the theaters will boom... Or we may realize, hey, we don't really need these. This worked out fine. Let's just stay home. It could be the end of movie theaters.
I suspect it's probably going to be more of the former. But I think what's going to be really interesting to watch is, you know, with so many people working at home now, you know, a lot of companies in the past have been reluctant to let people work remotely. And I think, you know, with what's going on right now, yeah, this is the biggest mass experiment in remote working ever. And if it actually works out for a lot of companies, I could see a lot of companies actually making this permanent for at least some portion of their workforce, which, you know, if they do that, there's obviously a cascading downside to that, you know, for a lot of the people that work in various services to support those people, you know, in restaurants and bars around downtown areas where they work. But, you know, it could also have some significant environmental benefits, because if suddenly, you know, a significant portion of people that were commuting are no longer commuting, that reduces the amount of miles they have to drive.
Pollution is down. Traffic is down.
Improves air quality.
Yeah.
And it could actually end up having more of an impact on greenhouse gas emissions and climate change than all of the other technological things we've been trying
Wouldn't
to do.
Wouldn't that be ironic?
And Sam, I think you're right that there's going to be a lot of people not wanting to go back to work, especially IT people, but lots of people. I mean, we're into a kind of permanent shift toward homework, or a great leap forward toward homework, I think. But in terms of movie theaters, I think movie theaters are going to become rare, because we're talking about 18 months before we have a vaccine, and then how long before everybody gets it and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't think theaters can last 3 months, let alone 2 years, without lots of people going. And so I think they're going to be lots and lots of closures. There may be, you know, I think if a town has 10 movie theaters right now, I think at the end of this, they may have one. See what I mean? It's going to be like really, they're going to exist, but they'll be rare.
That's probably all they needed, however.
Yeah. So there'll definitely be fewer screens, but maybe, with an improved user experience, you know, moving more towards, you know, some of these theaters where you have the nice reclining seats, you know, food service, making it a better customer experience.
It'll be like stage plays. Once upon a time, stage plays was how everybody got entertained.
Right.
After movies came out, they still exist, but they're kind of like for richer people and that sort of thing.
Isn't that funny? Movies, they're only for the wealthy.
Yes.
And then school is going to change too, education. My son has been on online school through high school in California, because we have charter schools there. Pearson, the big educational publisher, this may be true in other states too, has they call it Connections Academy. It's an online school. It's free. It's a public school because they get paid by the state per pupil, just as the public schools do, because of this charter schools bill. And he's actually used to it, likes it. His schooling hasn't changed at all. And I wonder if this might also be a sea change for how we educate.
I think so.
I think it will. I mean, I think it absolutely will. You know, Kevin's got Chatterbox. It's a smart speaker for kids.
It's over your shoulder right now. I see it. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah. He's seeing a run on these things. Because kids are at home, they're not supposed to go outside necessarily. they got nothing to do. And so the Chatterbox is an opportunity for them to have a big project. It takes a lot of time and it's very educational. So
Chatterbox
is
available online at
HelloChatterbox.com. Yeah,
but that's exactly right. I would imagine Raspberry Pis, science kits. We've been talking about EDX and other online schools. You could, if a kid's out of school, he can take Harvard's CS50 computer science course. I mean, honestly, this would have been a very different scene 20, 50 years ago.
That's true.
But in a way, it's almost as if we were planning for this. In some ways. In other ways, we weren't planning for it at all, obviously. But as far as education and online education goes, this is has to be a boom.
Well, we're all fairly old, except for Lou. And imagine if this happened in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was no home working at home. It was the 80s or the 90s. There was no way for people to work from home.
Yeah.
Nothing could have been electronic. There was no video conferencing. I mean, it's hard to imagine what would have happened.
And we're not putting a gloss on this saying, hey, isn't this great? It's obviously awful. But
yes.
I mean, it's very obviously awful for everybody in every respect. But I do think the world will change coming out of this in ways that may not be awful.
The interesting thing is we're always talking about trends on this show. I'm sorry. We're always talking about trends on this show. And this is a radical of the trends that we've been talking about.
Right.
So this is going to accelerate all the move everything to digital, work from home, all those kinds of things. They're all being accelerated. Many other things are being decelerated. But in tech is being accelerated.
One of our chatters says, the drive-in movie is going to come back. So we can all sit sealed in our cars.
Good idea.
Lou, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, you'll have companies start to gravitate more towards the online learning. Like YouTube is starting to curate things themselves rather than let everyone else curate it for you and produce content. You're starting to see that more, and you're going to see more and more companies actually curate these things and put out programs because they have the facilities to do it.
Yes.
They have the content to do it. Why don't they actually start to do it? So.
Yep. We're going to take a little break. There is apparently Apple decided to release something. I don't know. There is a new product or two. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But first, a word from our friends at Mint Mobile. They have done something really, really exciting, really remarkable. They have, we've been talking about them for a while. They're an MVNO. That is, they resell T-Mobile connections. So you get the T-Mobile connection at a really low price. As little as $15 for a month for their introductory 3-month plan. That's $15 for unlimited nationwide talk and text and 3 gigabytes of data. I actually liked it so much. I got the Mint Mobile SIM, put it in a phone. I had it in the OnePlus 7T. I liked it so much. I said, well, I'm going to do the year package, $300, $25 a month, $25 a month for unlimited text, unlimited nationwide talk, 12 gigabytes a month. It's the best deal in cell out there. And I'm a T-Mobile customer, so it's exactly the same service I was paying for at a lot less money. I think this is really great. They are stepping up. They're giving free unlimited data for all. It started March 15th. It goes through April 14th. All current and new customers, if you sign up today with free unlimited high-speed data add-ons. So I mentioned 3 gigabytes, 12 gigabytes. During this tough time when we're all needing the bandwidth, maybe to work at home or just to watch movies, unlimited. You can go to mintmobile.com/unlimited to learn more about that. If you're not a Mint Mobile customer, now's the time. They save money by not having stores, by being entirely online. They pass the savings on to you. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text, crazy fast 4G LTE. It's the same LTE you'd get if you were a T-Mobile customer. You can bring your own phone. They do sell phones, but in most cases, people can bring their own phones. You can take your phone number with you, too. It's yours. You can port it right over to Mint Mobile. All your contacts, everything come right over. And, of course, if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. Now's the time to get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan and get the plan shipped to your door free. MintMobile.com/twit. MintMobile.com/twit. Cut your wireless bill to as little as $15 a month. I'm $25 is a third what I was paying for the same exact service. And now through April 14th, there's no cap. no limits. Thank you, Mint Mobile. You can learn more about that at mintmobile.com/unlimited. Take advantage of our offer. We're so glad Mint Mobile's on the network. We thank them for supporting the show, and I encourage you to visit mintmobile.com/twitch. Show your support as well. Thank you, Mint Mobile. Cartoon from Nitrozak and Snaggy, the joy of tech. Wow. Did you see the new iPad with a new backlit Magic Keyboard and LiDAR scanner? Oh, you make me so mad. OMG, it has a faster A12Z Bionic chip and an ultra-wide camera. How can you possibly care about this stuff when the whole world is crashing in on itself and millions may die and our life is over, we know it is over? Because I understand there's a crisis and we all have to do our part to get through this, but I'm still a geek and I love it when there's some amazing new hardware. You really know how to throw cold water on a pandemic, don't you? So it's got LiDAR? by the way, who was it? I think it was Stacey Higginbotham who said, it doesn't really have LiDAR. At least not
Well, I'm not so sure.
Is it LiDAR?
That.
It's she said it's a time of flight sensor. We're talking about the new iPad Pro.
Well, that's what most LiDAR is. The vast majority of LiDAR sensors are time of flight sensors. You know, because all LiDAR is, it's a sensor that uses laser emitter and photo sensors to measure distance to an object. You know, measure the time it takes for the photons to bounce off and come back.
LiDAR stands for light detection and ranging. So it's just like a bat's sonar, but instead of sound, it's using photons.
Right. And so it's obviously a lot faster than sound.
Right.
But
I'm going to guess that the new iPad doesn't actually have a laser in there.
Actually, it probably does.
What?
It's a low power, probably a 905 nanometer laser emitter.
Okay.
And
okay.
There's a lot of different types of LiDAR. You know, the ones you see on the roof of the automated
vehicle.
The
vehicles. Spinning ones, but they're doing 3D, right. So, 360 degrees.
Right, so those have an array of LiDAR emitters, and it rotates around and scans as it drives down the road, so it gives you a 360-degree field of view. But there's other kinds that are, you know, solid state that use a MEMS mirror system, like a DLP, basically, to do beam steering from the emitter. And then there's also something called flash LiDAR, which is a very low-cost LiDAR. And what it does is it can use one or just a few emitters, and it pulses through a diffuser and then has just an array of photo sensors. So it's, you know, kind of like a camera sensor, like an imaging sensor, but it's tuned for the LiDAR frequency for 905 nanometers. And what that does, there's no moving parts at all, but because it's diffusing one emitter through this diffuser, you're spreading out the photons, so you have a lot less range. And they say this LiDAR sensor on the iPad is only got about a 5 meter range.
It's pretty distant.
Yeah, you know, and it's fine for what it's designed for. You know, so it's a laser emitter going through a diffuser, and then you've got a sensor set that's generating a point cloud.
And the idea is it's really for – by the way, this is the website. Obviously, this was designed before the work-at-home orders because somebody put a lot of work in this. But what they're clearly going to use it for is augmented reality. In fact, they've showed videos. The guy who did the lava game for Apple Arcade, that would be kind of cool. You know where the carpet's lava? And the furniture, your kids probably play this, Lou. The furniture's your island of sanity, and you That's jump right. trying to avoid the lava. Well, in the hot lava game, you're in a world and you're doing that, but now you can make it your living room. You hold up the iPad and you'll see the lava, you'll see the furniture. You're not jumping, a little man is jumping. But I don't know. I mean, it seems gimmicky to me. Who wants to hold an iPad up for hours at a time?
He's given developers a path toward the glasses that are going to come originally in 2022, probably now delayed to 23 or 24. But the Apple augmented reality glasses are definitely coming, and all this stuff is going to make incredible sense. But they're going to want developers. They're going to want games. They're going to want all kinds of applications in place by the time they come out with these devices. And this is clearly a gateway drug to the eyeglasses of the future.
Yeah.
It was a missing piece of the puzzle, because the HoloLens actually has the flash time of flight depth sensor, already the LiDAR sensor. So, you know, now you're talking about getting closer to those types of capabilities, which actually gives another tool in the toolbox for developers for sure.
Apple bought the Israeli company PrimeSense that made the Kinect depth sensor. So Microsoft no longer has access to that, but Apple does. I would guess that there are kissing cousins between that and the HoloLens.
And there's a bunch of other companies that are doing flash LiDAR as well. Yeah, yeah. So it's not that uncommon.
That was an acqui-hire. They want those people
right.
who have been working on that stuff for the future right. of their augmented reality, right. for sure.
So I thought, though, the most interesting part of this announcement, besides the fact that they announced products they can't sell in stores, but I guess they'll sell – I mean, I bought both. I guess there are people, sheeple like me, who will buy it no matter what. But I thought the most interesting thing was the ad copy that basically said your next computer – is not a computer. It said it's a magical piece of glass. Okay, you can drop the... Everything's magic now, Apple. Everything. So fast, most PC laptops can't catch up. That's that new A12Z Bionic chip, which, admittedly, Apple makes amazing silicon. The problem is their silicon platform is ARM, not x86. They have a little bit of a problem, which is they have basically ARM, iOS, Touch, and then non-touch Intel. They also released a new Intel product, the MacBook Air, which is easily their most popular computer, their best-selling computer. That has the new 10th generation Intel Core. They're using the Y, not the U processor, so it's the mobile, slower mobile part. It seems to me what I see here is a very... We've wondered what is Apple's plan when it comes to ARM versus Intel, when it comes to computing in general. For a long time, they've said the iPad is a computer that's not a computer. I think now there's a clear path, because the big announcement isn't so much the iPad Pro. It's this, yes, it's magic, this new magic keyboard with a trackpad on it and a cantilever design that raises. It's really an interesting design. In fact, I think you tweeted... Somebody tweeted, I think it was you, Lou, tweeted that this is interesting comparing it to the Surface, because...
Yeah, it is. I mean, the 2-in-1 design's been around for a while, but I think one of the biggest things is the fact that they are changing the interactions to be a little different than, let's say, a Surface, because they're allowing you to kind of still feel like you're touching the device rather than, you know, from the touchpad. So that kind of interaction user experience is almost... a game changer. It might actually shift other technology companies to do the same thing, I think.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I also think it makes clearer Apple's roadmap. There was a lot of talk, maybe this is going to still happen, but there's a lot of talk about, when are they going to make all their computers ARM-based and take advantage of their custom silicon? Now I think it's a little clearer that when Steve Jobs said, well, people always need to drive trucks, that the x86 stuff will continue for people who need computing. Video editors, you know, car designers, probably developers. But that I think their vision...
Marques Brownlee
and his 8K workflow. But there are still most people who use computers don't need that. And the iPad, especially with this keyboard, the trackpad... The attractive touch-first interface might be the computer for the rest of us. There's still a problem, though, and this is the one that Apple's going to have to address head-on before they can make this vision a reality. I really think they're really now saying, we're going to have two roads. We're going to have the consumer road. We're going to have the pro road. The trucks will be x86. I don't think they're going to bother with ARM. That was going to be a painful transition. We'll keep doing ARM and iOS for the rest of us. The problem is Apple screwed the pooch a little bit. And I think you've said this, Mike Elgin, with iOS apps. They set a standard, a bar for the price of iOS apps, 99 cents, $5, maybe 10 or 20 bucks, that no one's going to develop professional apps for the iOS platform because they can't. There's just no money in it. And that's what's missing right now. The iPad's fantastic. Amazing processor. Great cameras. It's got, LiDAR. It's got this. I think this new keyboard and the trackpad solves the last little usability issue. But they still don't have the software.
That's right. They you in general and across the board, you see Apple devolving into an ordinary company. It was an extraordinary company between 2000, you know, whenever Jobs rejoined it, launched the iPod in 2001, all the way through until his death. And since then, they've been devolving back to a normal company. You see still see them coasting on Jobs' oversimplicity. I love how stupid this is to call it a magical piece of glass. That's what Steve Jobs called the iPad when it was just a magical piece of glass. Now it's a magical piece of glass. It's a magical piece of plastic in the form of the pencil. It's a magical piece of vinyl that goes around for the keyboard and the trackpad. Everything's magic. All the materials are magic. The recycled aluminum, also magic. It's really dumb what they're doing. What they're doing.
You think this is dumb? You think this is a mistake?
I think it's dumb. No, well, wait a minute. I really want this iPad and the keyboard and the trackpad and all that stuff.
Yeah, because you, of all people, you, your mobile platform is an iPad with a keyboard.
I use an iPad and I also use a Pixelbook. So I go back and forth depending on what I'm doing. But I do my writing, my main work, on the iPad, and I use an Apple Bluetooth keyboard. If this is a great keyboard, I would love this keyboard. I prefer it because it's attached. But my point is that essentially what Steve Jobs used to enforce is there's one phone you should buy. There's one laptop you should buy. He always had this obsession with simplicity, with singularity. And now Apple's just like, well, it has this. It has that. Everything has everything. And I don't really think it's reasonable to assume that they have a very clear strategy. Fact is, they have to keep growing revenue from base where they are. They're a trillion-plus company right now, and they have to keep growing. So how do they do that? Right now, they're discounting things. They do all kinds of very un-Apple-y things. Meanwhile, they're doing also Apple-y things. They're kind of doing both. So I think that what they're really looking – I think that there are three things that are going to enable them to survive in the future: their car, their financial services, and their glasses – right, but it's not clear to them exactly how they're going to make a lot of money from that. In the meantime, they're trying to prep us for that world. They're trying to continue to serve the faithful, and things like little problems like does the iPad compete with the laptops? That's an issue, but I don't think that's top of mind for them. They're trying to sell anything to anyone and keep selling these things until they can get to this future where basically smartphones aren't even the main device. I think that's coming in 5-10 years, where it's going to be glasses and other devices, embedded systems and so on. But right now they're just I really don't think they know where they're going in the future. But in the meantime, they want to sell as much of this stuff as possible. And one of the hints is, I mean, look at how expensive this keyboard and trackpad thing
is.
Well,
you're paying laptop prices. The keyboard
is unbelievable.
If you buy the 12.9-inch iPad, it starts at $1,000. The same price, by the way, as the MacBook Air with a keyboard. If you want to add the keyboard for the 12.9-inch, it's $345. If you add a decent amount of storage, suddenly you've got a laptop price, maybe even more.
Yeah. But the MacBook Air screen doesn't float.
Yeah, but it doesn't have touch. It doesn't have the pencil. I still think, I don't know, I think their strategy, I disagree with you, Mike. If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said that. But I think they're actually showing a clear strategy for the next generation of compute. And Microsoft said this for a while, Lou. Their problem was they didn't have iOS and desktop OS, they had one OS. And so they try, and forgive me, but they unsuccessfully tried to shoehorn a tablet OS into the desktop OS. That was Windows 8. That was such a terrible...
Yeah, UWPs. Yeah,
terrible solution. They backed off on that. But the Surface is kind of that. And I think the Duo and the Neo will be also this kind of next generation of computing. I honestly think, Mike... It's funny coming from you because you're the guy sitting there with the iPad at the coffee shop. But I think with this cantilever keyboard, a trackpad, if they could only get pro-level software on this iPad, I think this is the future of computing. Lou, what do you think?
That's the big – the divide is the software. I think that's where they're running short on. I mean, if you look at it, the – you know, any other device that's touched, doesn't have to be a Microsoft device, is around similar pricing, and you get the full gamut of enterprise software that comes along with it. So, and then these are offlineable type software, right? These are not require like VDI or anything like that. You have to be online. So I think that once they get closer, once they bridge that divide, they will start to get more people on it. And they're trying. Like they've upgraded some of their own packages to be more efficient with the touchpad and to make it more, you know, integrated with it. And that will kind of force other applications that are already on the iPad to do that as well. And so they'll start to bridge it a little bit more. But I think you're right. There's some professional applications you just can't do. You can't develop on the iPad. You can't, you can't do really serious editing and video editing on the iPad.
But that's only because nobody's put out those things.
That's right. That's right. And they do have
there's enough horsepower. And now that you have a trackpad, it's got a T. They have the T, inverted T for the arrow keys. I mean, they're doing this. Looks like a real keyboard for a change.
The trackpad is not a great trackpad. It's a circle that goes around, and I've used the mouse support that they had with the previous iPad, and that was just like unusable almost.
Yeah.
It's not a precise pointy device of the kind that professionals would need, developers, graphics designers, and so on. They need much better tools in terms of a pointing device than this.
Have you see the Craig Federighi, I'm in isolation, but let me make a video on how the mouse works? Yeah. You like this? This is good. This is the Brady Bunch version of the show. hi, Mike. Did you see Craig Federighi's video? Because I thought that looked pretty good. At least they're thinking. So the mouse is not a point, an arrow, which is, if you think about it, kind of antediluvian. How can I make a turn of phrase? It's antediluvian skeuomorphism to have this arrowhead, right? And what they turn it into is a round circle, like what your finger would look like, until it goes over a button, and then it expands to cover the button. So you know exactly what that click is going to do. It's the button. And then when it
goes to... John Sturkiusa called it a ghost finger.
Ghost finger. And then the ghost finger turns into a...
Is that a Bond move?
Ghost finger. And then it turns into a, one of the traditional editing carrot when you're over text. It feels like it's as if they kind of threw out the traditions and said, let's see what we could do. I watched that video because it really kind of made me feel like, oh, maybe they really have thought this out. But again, the lack, if you don't have, and I don't know why they don't, because they make Final Cut, but if you don't have a Final Cut class editor, maybe they're working on that. If you don't have, they have Pages, they have a word processor. Actually, Microsoft does the best touch first word processor. Office is on the iPad, so that's, I guess, good enough.
Mm-hmm. And so the user experience will have to change, just like they've done with, the add trackpad support, and now you have more use of this, and so it'll actually have to change in all the software.
I'm as usual with Apple, I live a little bit in the reality distortion field until the products come. The iPad is shipping now, and the Magic keyboard, the cantilevered Magic keyboard, will come out in May. It's going to look like a real laptop because it's even got a Type-C connector on the hinge there. So if you sit at the coffee shop, they're not going to laugh at you anymore, Mike. They're going to say, oh, he's got a real computer.
They'll find some way to laugh at me, Leo. They always do, the coffee shop.
I'm probably overexcited. I also ordered the MacBook Air. Here they did an interesting thing. They dropped the price significantly. Mm-hmm. The entry-level MacBook Air from 2018 was $1,299, if I remember correctly. Maybe it was $1,200.
Yeah.
It is now $999. Education, $899. They put modern chips in it. They finally replaced that crap keyboard with the same keyboard that's on the 16-inch MacBook Pro, which gives us a kind of an indicator that that's going to be the future of Mac laptop keyboards. Mm-hmm. What else did they do? Otherwise, it's pretty much more storage.
They added some options for CPUs and storage options.
Oh, that's right.
You could only get one CPU.
Yeah, that's right.
And now you've got i3, i5, and i7 options. And the mid-range one, seems like the sweet spot. In fact, back in 2016, or whenever it was that they launched the previous MacBook Pros with the terrible keyboard, I was looking for a new laptop at the time. And I went and tried one of those out, and I could not deal with it.
Yeah.
And so I ended up buying a Windows machine, you know, and when, you know, probably later this year, once things settle down, you know, I'll probably go back and replace that now. You know, it's getting on in years, and replace that with one of these MacBook Airs, because, you know, it looks really nice.
It's gold too. They have a gold.
Although I'm not into gold.
The best color is the Surface laptop. What do they call that? Cabernet.
The teal. Oh yeah, the red, like the dark red. Yeah.
Yeah. Micah has the teal.
I do
teal.
Like the blue on the Surface laptop.
Yeah, that's
laptop
that's
too.
The one Micah has.
The one Micah has. Yeah.
Yeah, blue suede shoes. I call it Elvis. All right. Well, it's interesting to see Apple. You know, we were last week saying, well, because the rumor was they were going to do this. On the one hand, you know, you don't have a store that people can go and look at it. And on the other hand, you're losing so much revenue with the stores closing. Maybe this is a chance to recoup right. some of it with a new product. I think there's a lot of people like me that would buy it sight unseen because, well, we kind of know what the iPad is like. We know what the MacBook Air is like. And we know what that keyboard. I know what that keyboard's like, the improved keyboard. It's still not great, but it's better than it was. It's usable. Anyway. I'm just grateful to Apple for making some news. otherwise, it'd be the COVID-19 show nonstop, yep. And I don't yes. want to. Nobody wants to do that.
Yeah. And again, there's Apple is so well situated for anything. I mean, they can close their stores, and they have a really high quality online store
right.
for anybody who wants to buy this stuff. So they're very well situated. I mean, it's going to be costly for them, obviously, but the malls are closing, the Apple stores are closing, so it's just they're going to be online for the foreseeable future outside. Out of China, it looks like.
I don't want to poke a sore spot, Lou, but did you see Steven Sinofsky's tweet thread about the new
I did. iPad you know, Steve, Pro? I follow him all the time because he always has really interesting things to say. Even though he no longer works at Microsoft, he still does really interesting historical things. And I did see his tweet about the form factor. And he's also excited just like you are. I think he's like, you know what? They took this thing, they innovated on it, they changed it from a new form factor to an existing form factor, and they added a bunch of functionality to it, and now it'll ship the market. And I think he's right. I think that's what's going to actually happen.
He says, like software, hardware evolves.
Yeah.
We don't usually see it because, you know, we're very aware of software evolution. He says every new generation of hardware begins this cycle of, you know, redesign, bundling, and unbundling again. We're used to adding ports or absorbing new technologies over time, but where things get really interesting with hardware is when a new form is introduced. Often the first step is jettisoning many features from the leader. Yeah, he's as bullish about this as I am. So, and it's interesting, now once he left Microsoft, kind of under a dark cloud because he was Mr. Windows 8, right? He was Windows 8, right?
Yeah, but he had a lot of other things under him, too. Okay. I mean, he's IE, Outlook.com.
He's a smart guy.
SkyDrive. Yeah, he's got his legacy there.
And I think once he was able to talk about things besides Microsoft, right. he's become a very interesting, certainly provocative commentator.
I wish you can talk about innovation in tablets and talking about Microsoft without mentioning the Surface Duo, because this is the, you know, who knows if it's going to be a dog of a system or a great phone/tablet/thing.
Right.
But the form factor, to me, this is the form factor I've been waiting for a decade. I mean, this is such a beautiful form factor to have no flexible glass BS, just like a two-screen thing that opens up into, you know, it's a phone and then it opens up into a tablet. That's a great form factor, no matter what anybody
says.
So
there's the Duo, which is an Android. It's a phone. I know they said it's not a phone. It's a phone. It's an Android two-screen phone-sized non-phone. And then the Neo, which is running this. I'm fascinated by, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Lou. I know you can't talk about it. We talk about it on Windows Weekly all the time. Running this new version of Windows, this Windows 10X.
X, right.
Which, to me, and again, Lou, you could just tug your ear if I'm right. To me, what Microsoft really is doing, and this is long overdue, is redesigning Windows. Windows, you know, like every operating system, it's become, you know, spaghetti. It's there, you know, they're constantly on top of a top of a top of. It much needed, I think, a rethinking. And what's really interesting about Windows 10X, it's containerized. Everything is in its own container. There's still the way containers work, unlike virtual machines, which are an entire operating system, applications, everything. The whole thing is in that ball. A container is lighter weight because there's still an operating system layer that is common to all containers. But they're isolated somehow. And right. And I think for the future of technology, the future of security, and the future probably of flexibility and robustness, containerizing Windows sounds very intriguing. And Microsoft was smart about this because instead of saying, oh, we got a whole new version of Windows and scaring the hell out of everybody, they said, we're designing a version of Windows for this special new hardware, this Neo two-screen device. But, of course, they've also kind of implied that's just the beginning. And I feel like that's what's happening. And by hiding it behind this two-screen device. So, like you, Mike, I'm very excited. I think this is an interesting – is there – somebody, a little bird told me that you might have seen one of these once, Lou.
So, you know, a lot of people at in our company, they're self-hosting these devices, which means that you can take it out into the wild, use it. That's why you see videos online of people. And it's not – you know, it's not a secret – I can tell you I've touched it, used it. It's a fabulous, fabulous device. It feels great in the hand. It's very slippery, but it feels great. And even just the mobile device that you're talking about, the Duo, it's interesting because you can use it, you know, open, completely closed. You can leave it in your pocket open if you want, like a real cell phone. I'm going to test facilities and systems to handle that. So, yeah, I'm excited. I mean, obviously, we had the Windows Mobile fiasco, I guess you could call it. And I really loved Windows Mobile, but it just didn't go anywhere. This is just another chance for them to show them that we really know how to do mobile, really know how to do devices, and using an ecosystem that's already developed, like Android, right? So I think it's definitely a way to go for sure.
Who would have thought we'd see all these
mobile
new
devices, but not the don't use the people.
Say that again, Mike. It got cut off.
Just don't use the P word, the P-H-O-N-E word. And by the way, just quickly, if you ever want to leave one of those prototype units at a bar somewhere, just let me know when.
What bar and when when I can pick it up. Yeah, I am very excited. I will be first in line to buy one of those because I don't think I think we can all agree the folding screens have not proven to be very good. And so
that's true.
Maybe they pushed the technology. I don't know. The idea of two different screens that are related but not the same, is there a big bezel between the two? Like, are they really kind of separated, or they look like they're almost together?
No, it's pretty a small bezel there. Yeah,
there's a small bezel. Okay.
Yeah.
And the hinge technology is like Microsoft's really great at hinges for some reason. I don't know if you remember this, Leo, but the One Laptop Per Child project had a prototype two-screen laptop, and it was supposed to be for kids in the developing world and so on. But the vision for that was so breathtaking that I never quite got over it. And I hope this is kind of where this is going. Well, not that one.
This is the original one, the green one here.
Yes.
Yeah. But this was cool because
it's Fisher Price model.
Yeah. So they came out. They did make this, but they never made the two screen version.
Right. Yeah. And the coolest thing about it was that if it goes flat, it turns into a tablet. If you hold it up and bend it, it's in book mode. If you have if you put it upside down like a tent, it becomes like an alarm clock. If you know, it's like no matter which way you orient it, it would turn into a different device. And I thought that was such a brilliant idea for everybody, not just to kids in the developing world. And I'm hoping that the Microsoft two-screen devices do this kind of thing automatically in a robust way, because that would be just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, having that context awareness, you know, and having it know, you know, based on how you're using it, what orientation it's in, how it's open or closed, you know, and have it automatically change and adapt. While still, you know, part of that, of course, you got to keep enough consistency, you know, that you're not completely changing the mode, but, you know, to be able to work optimally no matter how you're using it would be really cool.
I think it's really interesting that we're seeing all these new form factors, and the industry is far from moribund. And what's also interesting is that the hinge seems to be for Apple with this new Magic Keyboard, for Microsoft, their big hinges, and for Samsung, all about the hinge. The hinge seems to be the new hotspot for design and technology.
Yes.
Who'd have thunk it?
I was vigorously searching online to make sure that they've already made this public, but on the Neo device, the keyboard, which is a magnetic keyboard, is actually really cool. You can actually push it up, and the glass becomes a touchpad. And then if you pull it back down, it becomes like on the Macs, they have that kind of that LCD at the top, which is a touch bar or whatever they call it. Yeah. It becomes kind of a touch surface there. And so you get this kind of hybrid type feeling to it. It just feels really good. And so I think that's one of the things they're looking for is, again, a new form factor, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I think that's really exciting. It's a special COVID twit. We're not talking about COVID, which is good. I thought by now we would be nonstop, but we've actually got some tech news to talk about. Mike Elgin is here, the digital nomad who has finally settled in Santa Clara County. We're glad to have you back. And it's sad because you're in the area, but we can't have you in studio because everybody's remote now.
So close, yet so far away, Leo.
Yeah, Lou Maresca, great to have you. He's the wonderful, talented host this week in Enterprise Tech Twiat. We really appreciate what you do with Twiat. That's becoming a great part of our lineup. And my car guy, Sam Abul Samad, I bet you I'm not going to see that Mustang Mach-E this fall, am I?
I don't know. It depends a lot on how long this goes on. Know that engineers are still working on it.
Ford has shut down the assembly lines, though.
The factories are shut down right now, but hopefully by August, September, they'll be up and running again. I mean, we better hope stuff is starting to get up and running again. Otherwise, if things are still shut down in that time frame, things are going to get really ugly.
Everybody does now just-in-time manufacture, right? So
pretty much, yeah.
Because it's not just when Henry Ford built that Rouge River plant in Dearborn, the whole idea was boxcars with iron and timber and rubber would come into one end of the factory and a Model T would come out the other end. Mm-hmm. It was fully integrated, and that, for its time, that was the amazing innovation. But nowadays, of course, every car is made from parts manufactured all over the world by thousands of different suppliers. Those guys are shut down too.
Yes.
So
if there's no assembly plants consuming your product, you got to shut down the supply plants too.
So you got to get them spun up. How long does it take before, once they're spun up, they can start getting the parts to the assembly line and cars can come out?
It's usually not more than a few days.
That's that just-in-time thing. They don't keep inventory of parts. It's kind of on demand as it goes.
Yeah, and that has multiple advantages. Obviously, it reduces cost a lot by not having to stock all this inventory.
Right.
But it's also good for quality, too, because when, if a production problem somewhere along the chain comes up, if you're stocking, 2-3 weeks worth of parts in your assembly plant and a problem cropped up in the supplier plant, you're going to have a lot of bad parts in your factory, and it's going to take a while before you realize the problem. And so, if you're, only stocking a few hours worth of parts or a couple of days worth of parts, then you can find those problems and address them much more quickly before they get out into the field.
Yeah. Is there any truth to the rumor they'll be making ventilators at the Ford factory?
Well, maybe not probably not in the assembly plants. But GM has been working the last couple of days with several of their suppliers. And what they're, rather than trying to convert their assembly lines.
Because that's a very really different product.
Yeah, I mean, it would not be practical. But what they're doing is they're working with their supply chain. There's a lot of companies making various kinds of plastic parts, metal parts, a lot of the smaller components that their tools, they're using various kinds of flexible tooling that could be more rapidly converted to producing components for ventilators. And it was just an announcement that came out this afternoon. I dropped it in the chat earlier. There's an article in Crane's Detroit Business this afternoon that they are preparing with some of their suppliers to manufacture parts for at least 200,000 ventilators.
Wow, that would be great.
So they're trying to facilitate the supply chain to get the components that the some of the ventilator manufacturers are going to need to start cranking out more of these things.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm probably in the minority, but I'd love a Tesla cyber mask.
It looks like the Cybertruck with all angles. Yeah, I don't know what Elon's going to build in there.
You can throw steel balls at my face and they just bounce right off.
The sheriff finally got Elon to shut down the Tesla plant. Yeah. He was
tomorrow.
It's been running into.
Yeah.
Interesting. So all of this stuff, the only thing it reminds me of is when the lights go out at a football stadium. We were at the Super Bowl in New Orleans when the lights went out. And what they always say is they can go out very quickly, but it takes them a long time to turn it back on. They don't come all on at once. They take a while to ramp up. But it sounds like modern manufacturing processes aren't quite like that they can get back up and running pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, as long as they do shut down in an orderly fashion, and that's part of what some of the delay was, right, in shutting down this past week, is they wanted to, get all their suppliers in line, get everything scheduled and set it up so that when the time was right, they could ramp back up again fairly quickly and without too much problem.
Good. Yep. We'll take a little break. We got lots more to talk about. Sam Ebel-Simet, our car guy, Mike Elgin, our digital nomad, Elgin.com. You're still able to write, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, you're in California now. AB5, is that going to... The California legislature passed, at the worst possible time, a rule that puts freelancers in California at risk because you can't write too much. So you're still going to be able to work even though you're not in Mexico anymore.
Yeah, AB5 doesn't affect me at all because I work for my own company, and the relationship that the publishers have is with the company, not me. So,
yeah, that's smart.
My boss is a jerk, but I work for myself. So it's
and Lou Maresca, who works for an amazing team at Microsoft, including Satya Nadella. I was just reading about him. I had no idea his adult son is a quadriplegic, blind, cerebral palsy. I had no idea about that. He never talked about it, but I think that's was an interesting story. And it's one of the reasons, of course, Microsoft has been so aggressive and active in protecting its employees, which is a great thing. Our show today, speaking of Microsoft, brought to you by LinkedIn Marketing Solutions. It's a hard thing. I'm a small business owner. I know how hard it is to get the word out about what you're doing. That's why we use LinkedIn Marketing Solutions. It's the best way to reach exactly the right people. We're all inundated all the time with millions of messages a minute. And so it's hard to get people's attention. But LinkedIn can help you speak to the right professionals at the right time. You know that because LinkedIn is the last decent social network in the world. But it is, and it's one of the best. With 62 million high-level decision makers on LinkedIn, you're able to connect with exactly the right business leaders who are relevant to your company, the people you want to hear your marketing message. With LinkedIn ads, your messages are getting through to the relevant people, and they help you in a lot of ways. They have great targeting tools. We've used these that really help you focus on reaching the audience you want, right down to the job title, the company name, the location, and more. And people are on LinkedIn because they want to learn. Of course, LinkedIn has great educational solutions. So a lot of people are there to grow, to get a better job, to make the connections and the networking they need to succeed in life. In fact, in a recent survey, 71% of people said the information that they find on LinkedIn, they use it to inform their business decisions. So they're actively looking for information you can provide them by marketing on LinkedIn. You're going to tap into the hunger to know more. It has been so good for us, very economical, very affordable, targeted to the right audience at the right time. As a podcast network, we've used LinkedIn Marketing Solutions for Twit many, many times. It reaches a great, wide, professional audience. It expands our presence. It gets us in front of the people that we really want to get in front of. And it's easy. This is also was a real revelation to us. Once you get on the platform, it's very easy to maneuver. It's very nimble. You can change the direction of your campaign very easily. A really powerful way to market. people might say, you know, now's not the time to market. I disagree. This is a golden time to get people's attention and to have them start them thinking about your product, your service, what you're up to. This is the opportunity you've been waiting for. And right now we've got a great deal, free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign. So all you have to do is go to linkedin.com/twit. Of course, terms and conditions apply. linkedin.com/twit. We really appreciate LinkedIn's support in this tough time. We're big fans, and we thank them. And we thank you for supporting us by going to linkedin.com/twit. It's just a complete coincidence that Lou was on at this moment. You're pretty, I mean, I think Microsoft is so big, it's pretty separated out, right? Every division and so forth. You
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, LinkedIn, in fact, especially the data. I mean, we're not even allowed to touch
this. Oh, this is important, by the way, because, you know, Salesforce, Mark Benioff, a little miffed, he lost out on buying LinkedIn, and he said, Microsoft's just going to use that data. So there's a big onus not to do that.
We're not supposed to,
Not allowed.
I got my job at Navigant through LinkedIn.
You see?
They found my profile and reached out to me, recruited me that way. And
yeah.
Now, I wish I could just fill my position from LinkedIn.
I have
an opening position on my team. I can't fill it.
I have to say, really?
Yeah.
You should try ZipRecruiter.
Oh, it's funny you said that. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, good. That's another story in another day. Another sponsor, I should say. So this shocked me a little bit. So Google initially said, we're not going to do Google I.O. We're going to do a virtual I.O. Now they've canceled the virtual I.O. No developer conference at all for Google. Google seems to be taking this harder than some other companies. We were just talking about how, oh, we can't update Chrome. We can't update Chrome OS. Now we can't do a virtual I.O. Thoughts?
This seems weird because I think a lot of companies are starting to just switch to online.
Right.
And to have them just go entirely shut it down seems weird. We just had a very successful summit last week. Yeah, MVP summit, which we had thousands of people do different buckets and different information, different tracks of information, developer tools, Office, that kind of thing. And this went really great. I mean, it was a really great thing, even though it was at last minute. And of course, Build's going to be online here in May. And I just think it's weird they decided to just shut it down. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me that they're going to do that.
They say it's out of concern for the health and safety of our developers, employees, and local communities in line with the shelter-in-place requirements by local Bay Area governments. We will not be holding an I.O. event in any capacity.
It seems to me that it's likely that they don't want to have an unsuccessful event. I know that my son Kevin's in education. He signed up for the Q conference. They turned that into a virtual event. He said that something like 200 people showed up.
Oh.
So the concern may be that it's just a dud of a conference and it's bad press and all the rest. So that may be what's behind it.
Well, the teachers, they can abstract that. They don't have to tell how many people are actually there or attend either, because it's all online. Which in person you can tell, but in online you can't. So you know, they could actually hide that.
Well, with shelter in place, you know, even if you're doing it online, you still are going to have to get a bunch of people together, you know, in a studio or somewhere. For the same reasons, Leo, that you know, you have most of your team working from home, you know, they're probably trying to avoid getting any more people than necessary.
Yes, in one spot.
A studio or somewhere to do these.
But it's doable. I mean, we're streaming. We've got you guys are on Skype. I'm alone in my office. There's an engineer two doors over. We'll never come within 20 feet of each other. I have to watch handles and stuff as I go in and out. In fact, probably in an excess of caution, I'm also wearing a mask. I was wearing a camo deer hunting hat for a while, but that didn't seem to make me any safer. But I am wearing a mask as I go in and out, just in case, you know. Here's my only fear. Somebody comes out a door, bumps into me, and So I've turned into Larry David. This is a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode nonstop here.
Yeah, I mean, while Google, has gotten the most attention for canceling I/O, NVIDIA, like I said, I was supposed to be out there in your area this week. NVIDIA was going to have their Silicon Valley GTC, their GPU technology conference this week.
They're big on self-driving technologies.
Yeah, and a lot of other things, but they were going to do all online sessions. And they've significantly scaled back a lot of what they're doing.
That's interesting. This week.
There's going to be a relatively small number of sessions. I think they're going to continue doing sessions over the course of several weeks. But the original plan was they were going to try and do all of the sessions online this week. And I think that maybe the logistics of that just proved to be too cumbersome to try to pull off right now.
Microsoft just was at GDC, which was all virtual. I was watching a lot of the streaming coverage from Microsoft. So, I don't know. It's not the same as meeting in person. But, what is a developer conference? It's about giving developers the information they need to work on the upcoming platforms. It's not something putting it off. That's the kind of thing that has ripple effects down the road. I'm just surprised. I don't blame them for it. If they felt like they couldn't do it safely, then I applaud them for it. But I'm a little bit surprised.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely tools to have you interact with your attendees, and you can still have a very good social interaction with them. So again, like you guys are saying, there's got to be some other purpose that they're having to do this.
Just
for.
Just don't use Zoom, right? actually, there are ways to avoid Zoom bombing. It's kind of I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you. Kara Swisher and Jessica Lessen tried to do a conference, the problem is the default on Zoom is screen sharing is open to all attendees by default. So some evil person, stupid person, decided to share some porn. Actually, it was worse than that. I don't want to go into too much of the details of it. But who else did this happen to? A couple of other people. Chipotle was doing a public Zoom chat with musician Lauv. Is that how you say his name? Lauv. They had to shut it down suddenly. Not exactly the look Chipotle was looking for. Oh, yeah. Casey Newton from The Verge. And Hunter Walk of VC were doing a work-from-home happy hour. They got Zoom bombed. So the deal on this is, and there's a good article in TechCrunch, before you set up your Zoom, you might want to look at the settings and fix that because you can turn that off. There's a setting that allows only the host to share their screen. There actually was a very good article in TechCrunch saying also you might want to turn off that thing that allows anybody to join before the host gets there. Not so good. You might want to turn on a feature that when you kick somebody out, they can't jump right back in. Not so good. There's ways to make Zoom more user-friendly, I guess, or more secure.
Zoom really should set these up.
Change the defaults. Change the defaults.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But Zoom—that's the whole thing. Zoom was always intended for, we use it for conference calls, and was always intended kind of for a safe corporate environment. Nobody anticipated that they'd do public events with hundreds of people in there. They had to cancel their Jessica Lessen and Kara Swisher had to cancel their Zoom event. It was ironically on the challenges women tech founders face. They decided they're going to do it again, but this time audio only. Wow. 600,000 people on Sunday last week downloaded Zoom, its biggest day ever. And, of course, Zoom's stock price, where everybody else is going down, theirs has been going up.
All of the messaging and video conferencing software, Cisco's, Microsoft's, it's all just skyrocketing.
Yeah.
Needless to say.
Yeah, my company uses Skype for Business internally, and we normally use that for our client presentations and calls, but I actually had to start using Zoom with one of my clients in China back late last year because you can't use Skype over there.
Yeah. It's blocked. Yeah.
It's funny that not a lot of people are talking about WebEx. Like, that's, to me, it's better than Zoom. I don't know why they don't, people don't.
It's expensive, but Cisco just announced WebEx will be free for the duration. Yeah. So yes, well, and, take a look.
And Web, at WebEx for conferences.
Yeah,
WebEx is fine. You know, if you're doing a presentation and you know you just want to show the slides, but it doesn't. I don't think it has video features for video conferences, which is, you know, depending on what you're doing, it's great for some applications, but I think for others, it's not so great.
There's Microsoft Teams, although Teams also very successful suddenly. A lot of people downloading it because Microsoft's offering it for free for the duration, including all the enterprise features. Little problem, though, in Europe, right? It was down for a while.
Yeah. You know,
you don't have to say anything about this, Lou, if you prefer not to.
No, I heard about it being down.
Yeah.
And I just don't, I have no
it was
idea
in Europe.
Why that would happen. Yeah.
I think. I remember we talked about it Windows Weekly. I don't remember. It was unrelated to traffic. It wasn't about a sudden influx of traffic. It was bad timing. Yeah.
Well, I think it's but there has been traffic issues, and it's been really interesting that Netflix and YouTube and Amazon have all reduced video quality, and also Facebook and Instagram have reduced video quality in Europe because they're concerned that everybody's using consumer networks and that it's going to be overloaded and people won't be able to do work and function. So that's actually a really kind of a weird thing. Suddenly there is no high quality video to be had in Europe.
But at the same time, the ISPs here are lifting their data caps,
yeah.
You know, showing what nonsense that whole thing
yeah,
is.
Yeah, that was my takeaway on that, too. Oh, you don't need the data caps anymore, huh? Oh, that's interesting. Well, I don't want to knock them because, thank you, it's generous.
Yeah.
But I wonder how hard it's going to be for them to turn those back on now that we know it's not because of lack of capacity.
I'm sure that won't stop them.
Netflix did not do this.
Comcast.
No, of course not. Nothing will stop Comcast. Netflix... in the U.S. did not do the same thing. And somebody said it was because of the infrastructure Netflix has set up. I don't know if this is true, but it makes sense to me. Netflix, do you remember they offered that, what was it called, the Open Network Alliance, something that they offered ISPs where you would host a Netflix box in your network center so that your customers would actually be getting Netflix not over the public internet, but from within the network. And Apple does this. For instance, Apple has a Netflix server. When you're watching Netflix on Apple, they're streaming it, I think, through their Akamai network, through their CDN.
We were talking about that when we were talking about net neutrality and how complicated that, in fact, is, because you already have, you know, the super heavy users of Netflix and YouTube primarily hosting, you know, so that's how we came to understand that the whole net neutrality thing is about between the ISP and the user at home. But yeah, that's a no doubt that is a very different situation in Europe than it is in the United States.
Yeah. I guess that maybe they didn't do this.
Some other ISPs, I think Comcast hosts some Netflix boxes in their data centers as well.
Yeah, they think they do. So that was the idea, is Comcast, Cox, Spectrum, your little guys would have a Netflix box so it wouldn't clog up the public internet. And I would imagine if that was widespread in the U.S., I think for a while, I think Comcast said we're not going to do it. And I think maybe they've done it eventually. But the idea was, you know, that would really ease internet bandwidth use. I think I saw 60% of internet traffic is made up of YouTube, Netflix, Amazon Prime, you know, streaming video. A huge proportion.
Got to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of YouTube, Google is launching new resources to educate students at home over YouTube. I think that's a great thing. You know, what was the term somebody used? Disaster-tunity. It's a not a good word, but an opportunity in disaster. And I think a lot of companies are taking advantage. They're stepping forward and offering these resources. Google's page is called Teach from Home, teachfromhome.google.com. Shows teachers how they can use Google products to teach remotely. It's hard for teachers who are used to sitting in front of 30 kids, staring at them raptly or not, to staring at a wall and trying to deliver the same content. As I said, my kid's very used to it. And I presume his teachers are, but I think a lot of teachers are struggling a little bit. Teach From Home also has a Teach From Home toolkit, which has resources about how to teach remotely and a series of slides. You can download that. The Teach From Home site is only in English, but the toolkits are available in Danish, German, Spanish, French, Italian, and Polish. More languages coming soon. YouTube has a resource called Learn at Home, which is at learnathome.withyoutube.com. And that's all the YouTube educational channels. There are some really good – Marques Brownlee, when he was here last week, I asked him, do you watch any YouTube? And he watched all the great YouTube science channels, of which there are some amazing ones.
Mm-hmm.
He says he learned how to do video editing on MKBHD from YouTube.
Yeah. Wow.
I think that's literally,
there's a lot of great content on YouTube, you know, especially for DIY stuff when you want to repair stuff. I repaired a television a few months ago.
Wow.
Based on videos I found on YouTube. We had a Vizio TV that just stopped working, and you know, rather than throwing it out, we bought a new one to replace it, but I put the old one in the basement until I had a chance to take it, you know, open it up and diagnose what was going on, and had to do a little soldering. But, you know, got it working again.
I learned how to fix a garbage disposal. And for those
without
of you outside,
putting your hand down in it?
No. After I got back from the hospital, I finished. And for those of you outside the United States, a garbage disposal is what Americans – it's a blender that Americans have at the bottom of their sink.
Wait a minute. So, they don't have those in the rest of the world?
Nobody has those.
It's actually a pretty awful idea if you think about it. Because you're just putting all your food waste into the water, into your.
It's a wood chipper at the bottom of the place where you put your hands. Yes, it's a terrible idea.
Come to think of it, with that perspective, it is really an awful idea.
Well, I never thought about that. What else are you going to do with your chicken bones?
So when a European comes to visit your kitchen and you flip the switch and it goes, they go, "What the hell are you doing?"
That's how you can tell Europeans who have visited the United States. They have one hand.
They do sensible things like compost. Google is also launching a $10 million. I had no idea, but of course it makes perfect sense. A $10 million distance learning fund as part of their $50 million contribution that's coming from the Google.org philanthropic arm. This distance learning fund will help COVID-19 response efforts. In fact, the first $1 million goes to Khan Academy. Awesome, to help them do their remote learning stuff for kids affected by school closures. Very nice. I wanted to give them a little plug.
Yeah.
Anthony Lewandowski. They're throwing the book at old Anthony Lewandowski. He was the star engineer at Google in the Waymo self-driving car division. Right, Sam?
Yeah, he was one of the leaders in the original self-driving car project, along with Chris Urmson and Brian Selesky and others. And he left in late 2016 and took a whole bunch of technical documents with him, started up his own company that he then 6 weeks later sold to Uber, and then had a cascading series of legal battles after that.
Google eventually won a judgment for $179 million, which
that was basically the bonus that he had gotten from
Where that number came from?
All of the leaders of the self-driving car project went, you know, back in 2010 or 11 or fairly early on, Google set up a bunch of milestones and said, you know, it's the company's probably not going to be public by then, but you know, they wanted to give them the equivalent of what the payout would be if this was a standard startup.
Wow.
That had an exit. So he said, if you hit all these milestones, you know, these are the bonuses you're going to get. And that $179 million was roughly what Lewandowski got from Google as his payout for the success of that program.
Well, he can't give it back. He says, I spent it all, man. he pleaded bankruptcy. I shouldn't laugh, but that is a pretty large fine. He also, on Thursday, pled guilty. He was charged with 33 counts of trade secret theft in federal court. He pled guilty to a single count, theft of a trade secret. It's a plea agreement, ends all the civil and criminal legal battles.
He agreed to that in exchange for dropping the other 32.
32. It is a criminal plea, so I presume there'll be a sentencing hearing at some point. He faces a maximum penalty for 10 years in prison. But based on the plea agreement, I would guess that there's some smaller amount of time that the prosecutors will ask for. He is currently CEO of Pronto.ai. So he went from Waymo to Uber, then went to the self-driving truck?
From Waymo, he started Auto.
Auto was acquired by Uber.
Right.
Okay.
And then after he got fired from Uber, he started up Pronto.
That's a semi-automated driving features for trucks. So he's back in trucks. Okay, the saga. What a saga.
I wouldn't want to go to prison right now with the coronavirus flying around.
No, I just saw this afternoon that
Harvey Weinstein.
Sometime, but not now.
In isolation and tested positive for COVID.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Man. Couldn't happen to a nicer fellow. I don't want to get in the position of wishing anybody, though, that, because that's a nasty
virus.
There's
a few people that I'm wishing would get positive.
Wow. Yeah, it'd be hard if you're in the general population I suppose they hand out Purell.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Amazon's actually hiring 100,000 people mostly in their fulfillment centers. Walmart said we could top that. They're hiring 150,000 people. So this is obviously good for some businesses, although Amazon is go ahead and try to find a grocery delivery service. They're closing their Prime pantry due to high order volumes. And I talked to a number of people who've said, that some of these grocery deliveries are 2, 3, 4 weeks out now.
Right. Yeah.
And they've also stopped accepting products from vendors that aren't essential.
They're suspending all non-essential shipments to warehouses. I had somebody call me today who wants a camera so he can stream courses and stuff. And he said they're all like, you can't get them now. I said, yeah, I'm sure they have them in the warehouse, but they want to be shipping more important things right now. What were you going to say, Michael?
Oh, just to clarify that the 100,000 is in the U.S. only. So
wow.
We don't know what their hiring is abroad, but they're looking at hiring a lot more people, delivering a lot fewer products. I think they're going to try to have some sort of social distancing inside the warehouses and stuff like that. And I think that it's important for people to be in and see that the availability of products may be constricted in certain ways over time. So, don't hoard and don't do all that stuff, but make sure that you do have certain things that you can order on Amazon now that you may not be able to order in a month or two.
You used to be able to set up Amazon Fresh for weeks ahead of time, but now they only allow you to 2-3 days ahead here in Seattle especially. And even then, those are all booked. And I have a bunch of people that I know that work there, and they're saying, hey, just like Mike's saying, is they're not allowing any non-essential shipments into their warehouse, which means, like you were saying, if somebody wanted to get a camera, they just couldn't because they're not getting that supply into the warehouse to be able to ship it out. So that's where they're at right now.
What are you doing, Hopefully Lou? You've got to feed a family of six.
So I actually use Instacart. And Safeway around here actually delivers. And so we've been doing that.
You've been able to get food.
Yes, we've been able to get food. And so we've been doing that. We tried Costco a couple weeks ago, and that was like a disaster. So we stay away from that.
Yeah. We were able to place in it because a couple of weeks ago, Lisa went. She said, I'm not going to let you go. She went shopping. Thank you, Lisa. She's a little younger than me. And she went out and stocked up, but we were running low on some stuff. So we were able to order on Instacart. We'll see if it comes on Thursday. But I did check a bunch of other services. I tried to restart. We used to have a CSA, a farm delivery, farm box, right? And we stopped it for the winter. I tried to restart it, and their site is just non-functional. I think they're being slammed right now.
My wife just signed up again for a CSA for the spring and summer.
I think that's a great thing anyway.
We've done it many years in the past.
Yeah, I stop in the winter because I don't want too many root vegetables.
In Beaverton, Oregon, they've set up a drive-through farmers market. So it's like a regular farmer's market, but you stay in your car and you drive.
I think that's a great idea.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is I think Blue Apron, suddenly their stock is up significantly. I would think that Blue Apron, HelloFresh, all of these, I don't know, is this an opportunity for them?
A lot of them go through the normal shipment companies, right? And so these shipment companies are having trouble, and then they're going to have trouble as well. So right. I don't know if it's going to be going up.
Right. So many people are working overtime, extra hard, risking their lives. Of course, the medical personnel, the first responders. But let's not forget just even people doing deliveries, working in grocery stores. Those people stocking grocery stores are working their butt off. And thank you.
I got a notification this afternoon from Nextdoor that University of Michigan Hospital System is now looking for donations. If you've got masks, gowns, gloves, anything like that, they've set up a donation facility because they're running low on stuff.
Tech industry stepping up, though. Facebook is donating 720,000 masks and 1.5 million gloves. They have the N95 masks, surgical masks, a bunch of gloves. They say they bought the masks for office emergency kits following the wildfires. We actually had N95 masks in our house after the wildfires because the smoke was so strong in the area. So don't think I went out and bought this N95 mask. We've had it for a while since the fires. Apparently, Facebook had a ton of them as well. So they're going to distribute those to hospitals. And they're not the only ones. A lot of tech companies stepping up and saying, here, take these.
So a quick PSA, there's a organization called it's a website called projectn95.com, and they're serving as a clearinghouse for masks. So you can send your N95 masks to them, and they will distribute them to hospitals, and they're trying to be an organizing service for getting the right kind of equipment to the right people. Then looking for N95 masks, surgical masks, isolation gowns, and ventilators.
That's awesome. Apple says they have 2 million masks, which they're going to donate, not just in the U.S., but in Europe as well to healthcare systems. This is Tim Cook's tweet. Our teams at Apple have been working to help source supplies for healthcare providers fighting COVID-19. We're donating millions of masks for health professionals in the U.S. and Europe. To everyone on those heroes on the front line, we thank you.
Do we know where they're getting them? Are these from manufacturing? Where are they getting masks?
That's a good question. I'm looking. I don't know.
I don't think that information is out there. They just seem to have possession of these masks.
Well, I wonder. Maybe it is like Facebook.
So, they have manufacturing these
for,
or something?
Yeah, for in the factory or whatever. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Let's take a little break. We're going to talk about Pwn to Own. They had to do it virtually this year. But first, let me take a little time out because we were working, even though we were working from home, and we put together a little promo about some of the things you might have missed this week on Twit.
On Twit.
So we have no Karsten cam. This has me just sad.
And I vetoed it. That's where it would have been.
All about Android.
Samsung actually is offering through their Samsung service centers and Galaxy Experience stores in 19 countries a service to disinfect your smartphone.
Mac Break Weekly.
All right, what are those new near earbuds you guys is wearing? They look like the old Powerbeats. What's different?
Basically, the Powerbeats 4 has the same sound quality as the Powerbeats Pro, which is a significant upgrade in the sound quality over the previous Powerbeats.
Hands-on tech.
I've been spending the last week with the Samsung Galaxy S20 Ultra. This is a beast of a phone.
This week in Enterprise Tech.
A lot of people are working from home. A lot of people are working remote. Your security team might just not be ready.
Darren Murph, who's head of remote at GitLab, called the trend crisis-driven work from home. Employees are being thrust into remote work without preparation, without warnings, without documented processes to guide them. And not everyone who ends up working remotely is going to be able to adapt rapidly.
Twit. Friends don't let friends miss Twit.
Thank you. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. Talking about security, talking about working from home, ExpressVPN is the VPN provider I recommend and I use. I did a lot of research when they approached us about which the best VPN was. And time again, I came up with ExpressVPN. Their privacy policy is second to none. They engaged a third-party audit. And the auditor said, and this just came out just a few months ago, ExpressVPN exactly adheres to their privacy policy. They also developed a really cool technology that ExpressVPN calls Trusted Server. When you use ExpressVPN, they don't log your data. They don't keep track of what you're doing. And they couldn't even if they wanted to. ExpressVPN runs these trusted servers. So when you know, you have the ExpressVPN on your app, on your phone, on your laptop. It's one button, one click app. It's everywhere. I use it on Linux, Mac, Windows, iOS, Android. When you press that button, you actually spin up the trusted server at the location you specify. If you don't specify, it'll pick the one closest to you. That trusted server is all yours. It's running in a container completely separate from the operating system. It can't write to the drive, even if some bad guy got in and jiggered around with it or something. It can't write to the drive. It can't log what you're doing. And the minute you shut down, when you turn it off, it spins down and no data has been saved. That means, unlike so many free and cheap VPNs, ExpressVPN has no information. They can't, you know, these inexpensive guys, they will sell your data to big companies. Sometimes they even inject ads into your VPN stream, not ExpressVPN. And this has all been audited by a trusted third party. It really works. ExpressVPN is also fast. For a long time, the reason I didn't want to use a VPN is I didn't want the overhead. You don't see it with ExpressVPN, and I can count now numerous times I've turned on ExpressVPN. Let's say, in fact, the last time I did it, I wanted to watch some Netflix in Japan. They have a lot of programming that's not the same in Netflix in the U.S., so I logged into my Netflix, said, put me in Japan, so I'm in Japan, can watch at Netflix Japan freely, anything that's on there. And then I stopped watching, but I forgot to turn off ExpressVPN. I spent the rest of the day running on ExpressVPN. I didn't even know it. The quality is so good, you can watch HD video perfectly from all over the world, thousands of miles away. I think that really sets ExpressVPN apart from all the other VPNs out there. It's more secure. They do zero logging. They are fast. It's not just me. Tech Radar, The Verge, CNET, all have rated ExpressVPN the best virtual private network. Protect your privacy, secure your traffic, even if you're sitting at a coffee shop or you're, you know, honestly, nowadays, now that we're working from home, you should probably use it then too. Protect yourself with the VPN I trust and I use. Right now, if you go to expressvpn.com/twit, you'll get an extra 3 months free when you buy a 1-year package that brings the price below $7 a month. expressvpn.com/twit. Now more than ever, we need to be secure. ExpressVPN is the way to do it. One button, one click, and I'm safe. ExpressVPN.com/twit.
Here's a product I think you guys should review, Leo.
Yes.
It's called the Lexon Oblio Wireless Charging Station and Sanitizer. It's basically it's a cup that you put your phone in, and it wirelessly charges it and sterilizes it with blue light.
Wow.
Yeah. It's from the MoMA design store of all places.
Oh, neat. So it's pretty, too.
Yeah.
Pretty. Micah Sargent has this thing. It looks, it's more like a coffin for your phone. And you put it in there. It's called phone soap. And you close the thing, and it's got a UV light, and it sanitizes it, right? And there's no moisture. Yeah, it turns out your phone is filthy.
Yes.
And
but this one has no moving parts. It's just a cup.
It's just a
beautiful idea.
Kind of like that. Or you could use use their wipes.
Two things you never want to shine a black light on, your phone or in a hotel room.
Oh, you definitely don't want to know. Yeah, so you're now reminding me. Apple has given the thumbs up. You're allowed to use disinfecting wipes on your iPhone. After years of telling people not to, turns out not. In fact, did you see, I loved this, we mentioned it last week, but Joanna Stern in the Wall Street Journal took an iPhone 8, brand new, put a piece of tape across it, and literally, by hand, wiped it 1,095 times. She had a clicker.
With toilet cleaner, right?
No. Actually, well, she used a regular wipe first.
Okay.
Just to make sure that it did not damage the oleophobic coating that keeps fingerprints off. even after 1,095 times, which the number came because it's 3 times 365 is the 3-year, term you would have that phone possibly. But then, yeah, she then used toilet cleaner and destroyed the phone. So don't do that.
No, don't use Comet.
No Comet. Nothing.
I've been using 10% peroxide in water for a long time, and that's not very corrosive at all, and it kills everything. 30 seconds.
Yes. Hydrogen peroxide. Actually, I bought some Clorox hospital wipes, and that's what's in them. And it doesn't smell bad. Right. So that's good. That's a good tip from Lube. And this is what he's doing to clean his 4 children every night before bed. You dunk them in 10% hydrogen peroxide.
Don't give them baths.
No, don't. The Lexon Oblio. It's on Amazon. Let's see if I can get it. Currently unavailable.
You can also get it from directly from the MoMA design store.
It's cool. It looks like a fancy face.
Yeah. Wow. I love this idea.
Yeah, it's UV light. But it doesn't close. Does the light get in your eyes? I guess not.
No, it's probably not great for when you're trying to sleep. It'll probably be like a blue.
Yeah, don't look
source of blue light. Keep it in the other room. Light.
Don't look down at
it.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see. We were going to talk about, what did I say we were going to talk about? Now I forgot.
Something important.
It was important. Actually, there were a couple of important things.
We were talking about Facebook. So
Pwn to Own.
Oh yeah.
So Pwn to Own, which is normally held at in Vancouver, CanSec West every year at this time, had a little problem because the hackers weren't going to fly to Vancouver to do this thing. So they did a virtual Pwn to Own, which I don't know how well that works. So the participants, the teams, instead of doing the exploit themselves, Pwn to Own, the whole idea is all year hackers have been saving, you know, how do I crack an iPhone? How do I crack Safari? How do I crack Internet Explorer or Edge? They've been saving these exploits for a whole year, and then they compete at CanSec West for points. And the more things you hack, the more points you get. If you get enough points, you'll win the thing you hacked, but then there's usually a fairly large cash prize. This year, they couldn't do that. So somehow, I guess this worked. They had the hackers email the exploits in. Send us your exploits. And then I guess they rang a bell or something, and the organizers ran the code. It was a live stream. All the participants were watching. 2 days, 6 teams. They managed to hack pretty much everything. Windows, Mac OS, Ubuntu. The way they do this is, you do a normal install, no special security, just the normal install, and then you have to hack it. Safari, Adobe Reader, Oracle VirtualBox all fell. And you can actually, if you go online, ZDNet has the exploits. For instance, exploit number 1, the Georgia Tech Systems Software and Security Lab, team of Young Hui Jin and Jungwon Lim and In Su Yun targeted Apple Safari with a macOS kernel escalation of privilege. The exploit was successful. The Georgia Tech team used a 6-bug exploit chain to pop the calculator app on macOS and escalate its access rights to root. The calculator app! Why didn't I think of that?
Should have been using pCalc.
Yeah. $70,000 and 7.
You shouldn't have been counting on that.
7 Master of Own points. But the winners, after 2 days of this kind of excitement, they had won last year as well. In fact, I feel like they've won every year for a couple of years. Team Fluoroacetate, longtime masters of Pwn to Own security researchers Amit Kama and Richard Jew, 9 points across the 2-day competition, 4th Pwn to Own in a row for Team Fluoroacetate.
And they're all learning what everybody is now learning, which is that meeting really could have been an email.
Yes, that's a very good point. I think it's hysterical. They emailed the exploits in. Ubuntu Desktop, local privilege escalation. Windows 10, local privilege escalation. That's the Fluoroacetate team. They leveraged a use after free bug in Windows to escalate to system, $40,000 and 4 points. Oracle VirtualBox, a lot of us use because it's free. Out of bounds read bug for an info leak and an uninitialized variable for code execution on the VirtualBox hypervisor, and boom, $40,000 Adobe Reader. Nothing's safe. Now, by the way, part of the deal is as soon as this exploit happens, those exploits are immediately given to the company so that they can fix them. So there, I think that's the main point of Pwn2Own. You ever want to do that, Lou?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not a good hacker.
There's a certain mindset that just because you're a coder doesn't mean you
bugs.
Can. Yeah.
I'm good at fixing bugs.
Well, that's
I'm good
close.
At developing new software. I'm just not good at hacking other systems.
I think you must have to be very patient because you just keep trying stuff until something breaks.
Well, you usually target something that's the least likely to be hacked, and then they find memory exploits or something. Right, exactly. And this is like they find buffer overflows or something, and they use that to exploit it. I'm usually the other way around. That gets detected, and then we just go fix it. So, yeah, I'm just not a good hacker.
A couple of cases during this crisis of the U.S. government loosening rules, HIPAA. Tuesday, the Department of Health and Human Services says it will waive penalties for potential violations of the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. This is the Data Privacy Act that protects you from having your health data shared. HIPAA prevented medical providers from using tools like FaceTime because it didn't have the security tools in it. There is stuff. Apparently, there's Zoom for healthcare. That's HIPAA compliant. So is Skype for Business, but
Doctor on Demand.
Yeah, they're FaceTime, Facebook Messenger, Google Hangouts, and Skype. No, but HHS said they will no penalties. It's more important that you get the care out there than that.
And just to be clear, this is for messaging systems that are private. It's not about interacting with your doctor on a public post or anything like that. It's just the private message.
And as Dr. Mom's saying in our chat room, it's for inadvertent, accidental release of information. Not you can't just say, oh, it's okay. Here, have my patient's information, please. The one that worries me a little more, though, the Department of Justice is asking Congress to waive habeas corpus. That seems like a blatant power grab to me. William Barr has really been kind of an authoritarian. He's also, of course, going to have, if the Graham Blumenthal Earn It Act passes, he'll also have the right to basically tell companies, no more encryption for you. The Earn It Act is in committee right now, probably working its way through Congress. Senate Bill 3398. And we've talked about it before. You should go to the EFF Action Center if you care about this. Read up on it and then write your Congress critter. I think both ideas are bad ideas. I don't see. I mean, there is a precedent for this. Lincoln waived habeas corpus during the Civil War. I don't think we're really in a Civil War situation, but.
And yeah. I don't think Trump is Lincoln.
Good point.
It's a law of nature that. People in government will seize additional powers and rights for them.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
And so we have to push back. They push, we push back. If we don't push back, they're just going to be able to use this crisis to erode our rights. And so really, everybody should care about this and go and get involved in this.
Because
this
see,
is a big
and,
deal.
You know, while you're sitting at home, you know, call your members of Congress, your senator's office, you know, and tell them how you feel about this.
I can't, yep. I would hope Congress would be smart enough to say, absolutely not. They want the right to imprison indefinitely without trial, without charges. It seems like there is, I can't think of any reason this particular.
George Takei had a great tweet about that yesterday. He said the last time that happened, his family spent 4 years in an internment camp.
Good point. Thank you, George Takei. Israel has enabled emergency spy powers during this. An overnight sitting of the cabinet bypassing parliament approval. The new powers will be used to enforce quarantine and warn those who may have come into contact with infected people. That's one thing that is happening, and I'm not sure I'm against it. It happened in China. Israel's using it now. I imagine it's just a matter of time before the United States government goes to Google and says, we'd like to know location information for everybody in the United States so that we can warn people if they've been near a coronavirus patient. Oh, wait a minute. We don't have to worry about that here because there's no testing. No one knows. But they would use that in China, and I think Israel has been using it as well. But the problem with that is you have to know who's got COVID.
Yeah.
I imagine, though, they'll work for that as well.
Well, at least you'll know it. In that case, you'll know social clustering, at least. You know, hey, there's people still
where
clustering
there's a group.
Together.
Yeah, that's right, a good point. Right. Yeah.
In Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. And South Padre Island.
It's amazing. Great story in Tech Dirt. Mike Masnick's been really doing a great job talking about a lot of these issues. You may remember the shortage in Italy of ventilators. And it turns out that there is a particular part, a hospital in Brescia last Thursday in the north of Italy, needed a supply of special valves in order to use the ventilators to keep COVID-19 patients alive in intensive care. The manufacturer was out, couldn't provide them. According to the newspaper in Italy, with the help of the editor of a local newspaper, Giornale di Brescia, and tech expert Massimo Temporelli, doctors launched a search for a 3D printer. Word soon reached Fracassi, a pharmaceutical company boss in possession of the coveted 3D printer. He immediately brought his device to the hospital in just a few hours, redesigned the missing valve, produced it. They produced 100 of them for free. Of course, they won't wear as well as the originals, but at least they've got them. And since they made 100, they probably have what they need to keep them running. Each 3D printed part costs roughly $1, which may explain why the company that makes this ventilator is so upset. They charge $11,000 for those valves, and they are now threatening to sue.
Only if they're evil, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're going to sue you because so they did not print the 3D files, which they, publish them, which they probably could and should if others are missing these valves. It could save lives. Audible's making stories free for youngsters at home. If you go to stories.audible.com, for as long as schools are closed, we're open. Our sponsor, Audible. Starting today, kids everywhere can instantly stream an incredible collection of stories, titles across six different languages to help them keep them dreaming, learning, and just being kids. And after being cooped up for days, I imagine your kids, Lou, would be...
Oh, my gosh. They love this. Well,
Well, you know what else is great is, you know, your local public library.
Absolutely.
You know, chances right. are, you know, they're...
Right. Online.
Most yeah. public libraries have services like Hoopla, Libby, and Canopy is another one. And, you know...
They're free.
Can, even though they're the free. Libraries are... Most of the libraries are closed right now. You can stream a lot of movies. You can download music and audiobooks and ebooks. So, you know, if you have your local public library, go check it out online and take advantage of those services.
That's exactly right. My sister is a librarian in Santa Barbara, California, and everybody's working. The library is closed, but everyone is working. They're answering the phones. They're doing everything they can. All the
That's
digital
great.
Stuff, the streaming,
That's
as you awesome. Said, is available. But even more crucially, maybe, if you have a question about anything, call the library. That's a good place to go to find out anything about anything, including the COVID-19 situation, what
That's
you should
awesome.
Do in your community, all that stuff. They have all the answers. And they're all working, so don't think that if the library is closed, there's no resource there, because the resource is still there.
Fantastic.
That's great to hear, and you know that's what librarians are trained for. They're not, you know, they're not just trained to shelf books. You know, they're actually trained to do research. That's what library science is all about. You know, and to help people find answers to questions.
You may have read that GameStop told its employees, "We're essential. Stay there and sell those games." GameStop's been hanging by a thread because. I mean, let's be honest. Who buys games in a store anymore? I guess, you know, my kid does. And I thought, Michael, you're going to end up, even if you buy that disc, stick it in and download 15 gigabytes before you can play anyway. Why are you even bothering? Just buy the online version. He goes in because they come with little figurines. If you pre-order, you get little plastic crap. And he wants the little plastic crap. Good news. After getting a lot of heat about this policy, GameStop has announced they're going to close their California stores. And And
Michael needs a 3D printer so he can print his own
print the plastic crap.
Interesting thing, there's been like a lot of companies are getting this slack though. Like Amazon was doing this with their warehouse people. They said, hey, say your 40-hour week, you got to do 50-hour week to cover this all. And so now they're kind of backpedaling on some of these.
Well, they're paying double time, which is good.
Right.
That's at least good. Our long national nightmare is over. The Sonic the Hedgehog movie will come out digitally March 31st. Thank God. I thought we were going to miss Trolls World Tour. That's also coming out. Whew. What a relief. Actually, Universal, NBC Universal is releasing a lot of its movies to streaming. They're charging $20 for a 2-day rental, but you can at least watch it. So, Invisible Man, I haven't watched. Have you watched that yet? I haven't seen that. I want to see it. But I did watch The Hunt last night. Do you know the story of that movie?
How was it?
It was supposed to come out last fall.
It was awesome. So it was Betty Gilpin, who I love. She was in Nurse Jackie. She's in Glow. Kind of never really got big star roles, always smaller supporting roles. Was just amazing in this movie. But it was supposed to come out last September. After more gun violence, they pulled it back. She was kind of bummed because I think she knew how good she was in this role. So now NBC Universal saying, okay, well, we'll put it out, $20 rental. And I was so desperate last night, we rented it. It's incredibly violent. The plot is a bunch of liberal elite billionaires decide that they're going to have a hunt. They're going to gather 12 deplorables and release them and then hunt for them. It's a story as old as time, isn't it? And it's pretty funny. The politics of it are hysterical. It doesn't have a political point of view. It's just very funny. But Betty Gilpin is brilliant in it, and so if you're looking for a very violent movie that you probably would never have seen in the theaters, thank goodness they finally got that out.
I've been watching Homeland, but it's kind of funny, like turning to Homeland because real life is too stressful and tense.
the tensest show of all time. Actually, I've been watching old movies. You know, Fred Astaire. I watched Pal Joey, Frank Sinatra last night. Great San Francisco movie. So anyway, a lot of stuff streaming on YouTube.
Contagion.
Contagion. I bet you nobody's watching that now, though. That was the number. So that movie came out in 2001, I think. It's an old movie about
2011.
Okay, 10 years ago. Yeah. Movie about this, what's happening to us right now, frankly, exactly. And it soared to number one on the iTunes charts a couple of weeks ago. I watched it. We all watched it. Yeah. But I don't think a lot of people are watching it right now. It's a little too close to home, do you think?
Yeah, there was Outbreak, too, is a similar.
Outbreak, yeah. There's a Pandemic on Netflix is a documentary series about this. It's a little painful.
If you haven't watched Devs, you should watch that.
Is that good?
FX. Yeah, it's really good.
So there's
Nick Offerman.
Besides Nick Offerman in it, it was shot at the UC.
That's all you need to know.
It was shot at the UC Santa Cruz campus where I was a high school kid. We lived up on the campus when I came to California in the 70s. I can't wait to see it for that reason alone. What's it about? Devs, is it about developers?
It's about this
developer
slaves
or something, right?
Well, it's a Silicon Valley company, and they've got this secret group that's developed an AI system that can essentially it's around the idea that the entire universe is deterministic. And so they've created an AI model that
so you would know what's going to happen
back in time
yeah.
or forward in
yeah.
time. And, you know, there's lots of intrigue and spies and everything. It's kind of a thriller.
Sounds good.
So it's a little bit of sci-fi, a lot of thriller. It's really interesting.
Okay, I'm going to watch Devs. It starts tonight on Hulu.
Actually, it's they've got for 4 episodes in now.
Oh, okay.
So the first 4 episodes are up on Hulu. It started about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Good. I want to watch it.
Yeah.
Let's take one more break and then we'll wrap things up. What a great panel. It's so nice to have you guys back in my old style cottage setup. We got Mike Elgin.
Just like the Skypeosaurus.
It is. It's Skypeosaurus all over again. We got Sam Abul Samad, Lou Maresca. Did you say this is your first time on Twitch?
It is. It is.
It feels like old times. It's great to have you.
I know.
I don't know why we haven't had you on
I've been there a couple times for the episodes, but I've never been on.
That's just nuts. That Leo is such a jerk. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. Now's the time, maybe, to take advantage of the little time out our businesses are having to improve your business software. So many companies put up with old business software, junky business software that's, you know, I always make a joke, but it's kind of true for us. It was written by, you know, an intern 5 years ago. The intern's gone on to become a veterinarian. He doesn't do software anymore, but you're stuck with it because it's the only software you've got to run your business, even though it requires you run an old copy of Windows XP. You don't have to suffer. There's brand new, modern, state-of-the-art software for every kind of business, and it's all available at Capterra.com, the best directory of business software. Millions of people use Capterra every month to find software for their team or business. You can filter it by price, by features, compare your top options side by side, save your favorites. And the best part is, after you've picked the software you want, there's more than 1 million verified reviews. So you can see what real users have to say about your software before you buy it, before you try it. It's totally awesome. Capterra is your business ally. And by the way, I left out the most important part. It's free. It's a free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your unique work needs. And there's software in every category, 700 categories. Everything from, you know, the big boys, project management, email marketing, IT management software, sales software, CRM, ERP, that kind of thing. But then also individual line of business software. You know, there's yoga studio management and dog groomer business software. There's everything there. There's a program that will make your life and your business a lot easier. Maybe now's the time to take a look at Capterra.com and check out those 1 million verified reviews. It's pretty awesome. Capterra is free. We've used it. We use it all the time. Capterra.com/twit. It's kind of my secret weapon when people ask me about business software, because they do, and that's silly. Don't Google it. Don't ask Leo. Just do it yourself. Capterra.com/twit. Thank you, Capterra, for a great solution. Absolutely free to users. And for sponsoring Twit, we appreciate it. You can help us by going to Capterra.com/twit. Capterra, software selection simplified. SSS. Thank you, Capterra. I did watch from GDC. In fact, we streamed it. It's on our Twit live specials. It's on the news, I think, stream, twit.tv/news. The Xbox, sorry, we watched the Xbox but didn't learn anything. Sorry, Lou. But before that,
I was disappointed too.
It was like, guys, Sony just did this most amazing description of the details of the hardware. They had Mike Cherney, who is a really interesting guy. When he was 18 years old, he dropped out of UC Berkeley to go to work for Atari. He wrote the Marble Madness arcade game, right? I mean, this guy, and then ever since, he's been like this brilliant developer genius. He's not a Sony employee, but for the last two PlayStations, he's been a consultant. He's the chief architect of PlayStation 5. And I thought it was very interesting to hear him talk. For one thing, it was clear that they kind of didn't, they knew that in a spec race, they came out second to the Xbox One, Xbox Series X. You know, Xbox Series X has 12 teraflops graphics processing. They only have 10 and a half. The CPU, I know, only 10 and a half. The CPU is not being run as fast. In fact, for the first time on a console, Sony's going to use basically what's like speed step, a frequency variation depending on the need of the game. They also, instead of having a terabyte SSD, they have an 855 gigabyte SSD. But then they did something kind of interesting. Actually, I think I like Microsoft's solution a little bit better. Sony's going to leave an open M2 slot for you. So you can open up the case, put in it, as long as it's certified, and only, you know, not all of them will be, but put in an M2 to expand the storage. Microsoft's doing it even better. Same idea, but they're going to have a little cartridge that you plug in. So it's a lot easier for the user.
Yeah, the Surface X does this too. There's a little door that pops open. You just slide it in there. It's
pop
pretty
it right
cool.
in. Yeah, I think it's a great idea. But I just was fascinated. They talked a lot about audio on the PlayStation 5, what they're doing with audio, why they feel like, you know, 10 teraflops is sufficient, why they're using an SSD. There's the Xbox Series X will have an optical drive, a Blu-ray but not the Sony, even though they invented Blu-ray. And that's, I think they had explained a little bit there. They said, you know, it's just the SSD is so much faster loading. We just don't want to put a game on a Blu-ray disc. He dropped a little at the beginning. He dropped a little line that I picked up on. A lot of people did. The PS5 will support the overwhelming majority, not all, but the majority of PS4 games. And he talked a little bit about why that was. But we're getting close. I don't, you know, it'd be nice if they could push those out a little early, because there's a lot of people at home playing games on the PS4 and the Xbox One X. I have been. I know. It's a good way to put your mind at ease.
A lot of these services are having trouble, too. I think Xbox had a little trouble last week. Keeping up. PlayStation, too.
Yeah, yeah. Turing Prize goes to Pixar pioneers for inventing CGI processes like the Render Man, Pat Hanrahan, and Ed Catmull from Pixar. The share the $1 million. It's the Nobel Prize of Computing. Turing Award from the ACM. Congratulations.
Yeah, Catmull did Z-buffering. I mean, that's basically used by everybody now.
He invented Z-buffering. That's wild. That's the ideas of a depth as well as X and Y axis. You get depth.
Right, right. And texture mapping, right.
That was one of the things that was so interesting. Cherney was talking about kind of the same thing with audio. Z-buffering audio, so 3D audio. And you still have to do... They're going to use ray tracing to calculate occlusions, not just for the visuals, but for the audio. So if somebody goes behind a rock, their voice will be more, won't be attenuated by the rock. I thought that was just fascinating. So congratulations to Catmull and Hanrahan.
Well deserved.
Well deserved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody got any Bitcoin?
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I have the password to your wallet.
Oh, yeah, I would love that. Right about now, I'd appreciate it. Let's see. I think that's – I'm just seeing if there's anything. You guys looked at the rundown, anything? We missed robo-taxis need a disinfectant system. I was surprised to see this. Yeah. A lot of the autonomous vehicles are off the road, probably because it's not safe just to have somebody else get in the car for the next ride.
Yeah, well, you know, all of the you know, the ones that are actually carrying passengers right now, which is mainly Waymo in Arizona and Aptiv in Las Vegas, they still have safety drivers in them. And but even, you know, down the road, you know, at some point when we have some other pandemic, when we eventually have actual true robo taxis,
yeah,
you know, you have this problem of this is something we need to be thinking about now. You know, today when you have taxi drivers, you know, or ride hailing drivers, you know, if somebody gets sick in the back of your car, you know, and you can pull over and clean it up and, you know, or if they leave something behind. But in the future, you know, where there's no driver.
Robots can't clean vomit.
There's no way for them to clean them, to get those vehicles cleaned. And if you've got somebody that's sick and, you know, coughing in the vehicle, you're going to need to put something like these UV emitters, you know, in the cabins of these vehicles. So, you know, because you can't have them going back to the depot after every ride to get cleaned up. So, you know, the companies building these things need to start thinking about this now, you know, about how are they going to handle this going forward?
They should do. Have you ever used those French public toilets in San Francisco? They should do that. Mm-hmm. Have you used those?
Well, they clean themselves every. No, I haven't.
They do. They have them up at Coit Tower. Yeah, so it has a mechanical door. So you go in, you do your business. The door closes and locks behind you, and then it hoses itself out. It's completely clean the next time you use it.
Yeah. There's going to have to be a lot of adaptation, and that's one of them that we need, absolutely. And you know, this is the, you know, just a quick aside of something I witnessed in Mexico City, which I thought was really interesting. When, you know, a couple of years ago, the electric scooters, electric bicycles, all that kind of stuff was exploding in Mexico City. I mean, just everywhere. There are multiple.
I love them. I love them.
Yeah, but nowadays, there's almost nobody's using them. Because Mexico City's streets and sidewalks aren't quite – people were biting it and wiping out on the street because there'd be a crack in the street or something like that. So you need really good roads for all good this ride-sharing. stuff. So this is another example of where we need self-driving cars that hose themselves down, and we need scooters and bicycles that can handle rough terrain.
Yeah.
For cities that are not, you know, Phoenix, Arizona, or something like that with great roads. So, you know, there's going to have to be a lot of adaptation, and a lot of the adaptation for, you know, along the lines of the sharing economy, et cetera, the gig economy, you've got all these people who are being laid off, and they, you know, laid off people can turn to a gig economy job right away, like driving. But with those in decline, that's a problem. So everybody's going to have to get creative about how they can deliver things virus-free, how they can offer rides in a way that's safe for everybody. We need a lot of innovation fast in all of these areas for the coronavirus and also to just deal with reality going forward.
Well, there's an incentive now. I want to correct myself. I guess Sony is putting an optical drive-in. I was just looking at the specs. I misunderstood Mark's presentation. I thought he was pointing out that they're going to use an SSD. I thought he meant in lieu of an optical disc, but I guess it's in addition to. Or maybe the optical disc will be optional. Neither Microsoft nor Sony announced a price.
The games will come on memory stick now.
I hope not. I do hope
not. Go back to the old Nintendo model, huh?
You know, a lot of TV shows and movies,
you got to blow them out.
They're all shut down. No more production. Netflix is creating a $100 million fund to support all the Hollywood people put out of work. Not the million-dollar movie stars. There's a lot more people work on a movie. The gaffers and the riggers and the all of the
catering crews.
So Netflix is shutting down a lot of its productions, but they have pledged $85 million to support people working on its productions and another $15 million to third parties like the Motion Picture and Television Fund.
So you might want to ration your Netflix watching, you know, so you don't run out of stuff to watch.
You're going to run out, but it takes a while, right? They've shut down The Witcher. They've shut down the new season of The Witcher, the new season of Stranger Things. They're going to not continue to pay everybody, but they're going to give people some pay. To at least 2 weeks pay, even on those shutdown.
Yeah, Apple shut down their productions.
Well, if we all get desperate. Yeah, if we get desperate for entertainment, we'll always have YouTube.
We'll always have podcasts. Podcasts, my friends.
Podcasts.
That's right.
Mike Elgin, thank you so much. I'm glad you're home, safe and sound.
Thank you.
Gastronomad.net, Elgin.com. Don't forget to get Chatterbox. That's your son Kevin's really cool project to design your own voice assistant. A great way while you're stuck at home with the kids. I think parents are looking for ways to you know, create curricula for the kids.
You want
to
see how smart this is?
Yeah.
What's the best tech podcast?
Squid with Leo
Laporte
is the best tech podcast.
What?
This is a smart device.
I must have, I have a friend.
I'll take one of those.
I have a friend in high places. That's right. Where is it we can get Chatterbox?
HelloChatterbox.com. And there's, by the way, if you got a kid who's got a school closure, use the offer code Keep Learning.
Oh, nice.
And you get a discount.
Oh, that's nice.
15% discount. Yeah.
That's really great. Is Kevin doing well with it? I think it's a great idea.
He is. Manufacturing is difficult, but he's able to do it. So,
what's in there? Is it an Arduino? Is it a Pi? What is in there?
It's a Raspberry Pi based thing. And then he's got his own proprietary soundboard. And most of it is open source and so on. And it's cardboard on the outside, of course. So it's very inexpensive to replace the outer part, and the inside is reusable. So
really neat.
It's a great product. It's very private.
Thank you, Mike. Stay well, stay healthy. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you. And thank you, Leo.
With any luck, because Mike always would bring me foodstuffs when he comes up here. Last time he brought me a beautiful brown sugar panela from, was that from Mexico or El Salvador?
That was from Mexico, yes.
But it's a traditional Central American form of sugar, unprocessed sugar. Yeah. And I didn't yet make Amira's recipe for the butternut squash with panela casserole.
Yeah,
but
you got to do that.
Best dessert I ever had. You bake it. It's, oh my God, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike Elgin. Sam Abel, Samit, always a pleasure. Thank you, my car guy. who is stuck with driving his Miata in Detroit. I'm sorry to say. No, that's not so bad. We'll see Sam every Sunday on the radio show, but also, of course, his Wheel Bearings podcast is available at wheelbearings.media. And there's still a lot to talk about, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. We recorded one a couple of days ago. We got 2 hours in there, all socially distanced. Nice. My co-hosts, Dan Roth, is in Boston, and Rebecca Lindland is in Connecticut. So, you know, we stay well apart from each other.
Very nice.
Works out great.
Wonderful. Yeah. And boy, Lou, now that you've done the big show, I think we're going to have to get you back here on a regular basis. I really appreciate it. Lou Maresca is the host of our Enterprise show, This Week in Enterprise Tech. He's also Code Monkey, Principal Engineering Manager at Microsoft in the Office Products Division. And we really appreciate you spending some time on this Sunday evening.
Thanks for having me, Lou.
Yeah, take care of your family. We really appreciate all you do for the TWiT Network. We appreciate all of you who join us every week to talk about the week's tech news. We hope you're staying healthy, and we hope you will listen to more of our shows. They're all available at twit.tv. This show we do, as we do with all of our shows, we stream live as we're making it. You can watch us do the live stream at twit.tv/live every Sunday, right about 2:30 Pacific. That's 5:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. There's live audio and video at twit.tv/live. Of course, because it's a podcast, you can always get it on demand. The on-demand show is available at twit.tv, our website, and YouTube. But the best way to get it, subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll have it ready for your Monday morning non-commute, your commute from the bathroom to the living room. That's the only thing I worry about, is that without commutes, are people going to listen to shows as much as they did before?
Man. I listen to lots of podcasts.
I do think so.
I was working from home.
We're
for
here
years,
to keep you company. We did it last Friday that I think we're going to do more of. I got together with all of our staff hosts, Micah Sargent, Ant Pruitt, Jason Howell, and I, and we did an Ask Me Anything, an AMA.
That's great.
And it
really
was
enjoyed that, watching.
Did
that.
You watch it? It was so much fun to do. We've put it. I think it's on our twit.tv/events feed, I would guess. So if you missed it, and I think we're going to start doing those more often. In fact, Lou, I think you're going to do one.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
Yeah. So I think that'll be a lot of. Say again. It's on the main Twit page. Okay. So go to twit.tv or youtube.com/twit, and you can see our Ask Me Anything. That was a lot of fun. Otherwise, all of our shows continue as always. The recordings are a little different, as it was today. Apologies if I made anybody nauseous with my switching. I'm getting back. I haven't done this in 9 years. Give me a break. I'm getting back in the saddle. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Stay healthy. Stay safe. And we'll see you next time. Another TWiT is in the can. Bye-bye.